All right. Good morning. I got the sign from PJ that we're ready to start our meeting. Good morning, everybody. Today is July 23rd, and this is our Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting, joined by all of my colleagues, both here in person as well as via Zoom. So thank you all for being here today. Got a few things on today's agenda. We're going to start with our CFO, John Woodruff, walking us through where we're at with our operating and capital budget. And then we're going to go on to the regular course of the Finance Committee agenda items. So if you want to take it away, John.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So today is the third of the three scheduled budget workshops that take place during Finance Committee meetings. And so today we have kind of a recap. There were several items that came up at last week's meeting, and so we wanted to just touch on each of those. And then we have five other items that have a budget implication, so we wanted to try to hear them today. So following this meeting, hopefully we would be in good shape and captured all the different adds and deletes and changes so that we can try to go as final as possible going into the first public hearing in September. So with that, if we could get the presentation up. So what I'm going to do is walk through the operating budget items and then the capital budget items. So the operating budget items, first one, next slide, was a police temporary staffing. Next slide. And so here, I believe Commissioner Samuelin brought up, we had mentioned that after August 21st, we wouldn't have the Miami-Dade school officers, the 25 officers who've been helping us out every weekend. And so there was a discussion about what could we do potentially to augment that once that goes away. And so police has been calling to all the different agencies in the county, and we feel pretty optimistic that we can get about 8 to 10 officers through the end of the calendar year. And I think that plan is kind of coming together, and you will be receiving an update through LTC sometime soon, definitely before August 21st. Any questions about that one? Okay, next one. Okay, the employee incentive program. So we talked about adding this one-time enhancement with a three-year commitment. This, again, is an employee incentive program that funds a monthly $250 stipend for police and fire sworn personnel to have a primary residence on Miami Beach. And so this enhancement has been added to the 22 budget. The program details will be worked out by HR, and we hope to, and we were asked to bring back a status of implementation within at least a year. If there's some reason to do it sooner, be happy to move that up. That sound good? Okay, next slide. Okay, I believe the mayor had asked us to look at a potential increase to the off-duty rate in case we need to enhance or increase the coverage in other locations. And so police is developing a rate increase scenario right now. Thankfully, that just only needs to be approved by the city manager. It doesn't need to come back to commission. But so that update is pending and should be coming through an LTC in the next week or so. Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may. John, that's great that we're looking at that. You know, we had an item at Neighborhoods where we were talking about off-duty, but we sort of had to pull that because we weren't really ready. I've heard a bit from some operators that would like to be using more off-duty. So my question is, roughly, what's the timeline for that?
Commissioner, I've asked the department to give me a matrix that summarizes for me what off-duty rates look like across the county. I think it's important to understand that before I make a decision. At the end of the day, the commitment to off-duty is real. We want to be able to provide that service. What we're finding is that there's a lot of competition for police officers in this community. Dolphin Stadium is a big user of off-duty. There are other places that are big users, and so we have to have a rate that's competitive, and we have to have a rate that entices officers to want to come here and work here. Obviously, our priority is to offer those opportunities to our own officers, but as all of you know all too well, our officers have been extremely busy almost every weekend for months now, and so sometimes it's difficult to be able to find our own officers that are willing to do that. That is the priority, and they will always have the first opportunity, but we want to come up with a rate that's competitive. So the department, I don't know, Chief Clements is here. Maybe he can tell me where we're at in that analysis, and hopefully as soon as I get it, we can make that decision.
Members of the Commission, good morning as well, Madam Manager. Yes, we are in the process right now of looking at our off-duty rate. We're comparing it to other municipalities and entities around Miami-Dade County to see if you know where we're at in that process. But we also recognize the fact that we are up against what would be a overtime versus off-duty comparison. We have an enormous amount of overtime opportunities for officers available that are out there. And we're trying to figure out a way to be able to encourage the taking on of the off-duty component as well. I have not spoken to the manager yet about that plan, about the comparative analysis, or what my suggestions are, but that meeting is going to be coming in the very near future. And I hope to be able to get some consensus on that, be able to move forward with it. And we think at that point in time it will stimulate the ability to be able to get off-duty at least more manned by our personnel versus outside personnel.
Thank you for that, Madam Manager and Chief. I would just underline the urgency, Chief. I know you're working hard at it, but we want off-duty police out there. We want to get this done. So as soon as we could do it, would really be appreciated. Thank
Agreed,
you,
sir.
Mr. Chair.
Chief, are there – I know we want our guys there, if that's preferred. Are there other people available? Because the question is, you know, obviously you're getting the calls more than anyone. There are places that want a police officer there that are, and if we're unable to provide one, then the secondary position is somebody who may not be one of our cops. School board, I know, has recently been available. I guess if it were just my choice, I'd want coverage first and foremost, then ideally coverage with a Miami Beach cop if we have to change the rates or have a rate for a club rate versus, you know, a security rate or something like that. Are we providing coverage? What's the chances that every place that we've asked to, because we have at least one ordinance that requires some places to have coverage, and we were going to expand that to more parts of the beach, but we're waiting to first get a handle on the availability issue. So I guess my question is there something we can do to just make sure that any place that wants one can get some kind of uniform presence at the times we want them to? Because I just think off-duty is one of the best ways, we've talked about this, to deal with a lot of our challenges because they're in a fixed location, often in a hot spot, and there's a uniform there, and that, I think, would go a long way. So what's the chance we can at least get coverage, even if it's not a beach cop?
Well, our off-duty office has actually reached out to our partners around Miami-Dade and offered these opportunities. We have had a few takers as it pertains to filling some of the positions that are there. There are some municipalities and departments that restrict what types of jobs that can be done, and that's an internal policy on their part. So the chances are, there's always an opportunity for us to be able to do that. The question is going to be is what are the limitations? And I think legal could opine on this as well, that when we're bringing in someone from outside of our jurisdiction, that really, for the most part, they're there for presence purposes, that their enforcement is limited to that of a civilian. They don't have those arrest powers unless, of course, it's the Florida Highway Patrol or Miami-Dade Police Department, which has countywide jurisdiction or statewide jurisdiction. So with that, I can understand why there would be some hesitation on the parts of chiefs from other municipalities to be able to let their personnel work some type of jobs versus what Miami-Dade School Police did, which was there working a corridor and were there for presence purposes. They were okay with that, and they were perfectly fine.
I guess my point is my priority is presence, an office, a uniform presence first, and then secondly, whenever possible, a beach presence. But the one option that I think is really not good is just no presence at all, especially in places where we've asked them or they want it. Because obviously when somebody reaches out and says, I'd like a copier, they usually have an idea that they need one.
Off-duty presence is always good. It's a force multiplier for us. It keeps us from having to put on-duty personnel at a location to monitor crowds and traffic. And more importantly, it keeps them in service to be able to go ahead and deal with other calls for service around the area. Again, when we do get these types of events, for example, like Rolling Loud comes in, the after parties, we're concerned about with regards to the crowd and the traffic associated with it after hours. We have staffed up, as the manager said, we've staffed up our staffing plan this weekend to accommodate that and to obviously deal with those situations as they come up. But you're right, off-duty is always a better alternative rather than on-duty.
Yeah, I mean, I think our residents may not realize that when we make an we arrest more than a lot of places because we have more activity than most places. And when we make an arrest, it takes a handful of police off of their typical assignments for hours sometimes because it's both crowd control and processing of somebody. So the result is that police that would be elsewhere are now taking care of the arrest. When you have an off-duty, they're going to stay at a fixed location, presumably at a place that's, you know, that's a hot spot. So whatever we can do to, because I hate getting a call from a club owner saying, well, you pass something requiring I get a cop here and I just can't, and nobody's available. So anyway, I know you get it, and but I think we got to work it out in the next few months because I had another ordinance we were going to put on requiring more of this, and until we figure out where we're getting people from and who we're getting, we're passing ordinances that are not really aren't going to be able to do anything. So.
Yes, sir.
Mayor, I believe Commissioner Steinberg has her hand up.
All right.
May I?
Ask Commissioner Areola. It's his meeting.
Commissioner chair? Steinberg, please.
Through the chair. Don't we have, Chief, an MOU in place with these other agencies, or can we get MOUs in place whereby they're not just merely citizens in uniform?
I believe the MOU covers situations where we're under an emergency order or we're acting under an emergency order and not just outside the, I guess, what we would consider to be the scope, if you will, of the off-duty program. Again, I would ask the city attorney to opine on that as well, but I don't think the MOU would cover the off-duty program. It would be more under situations where we need additional help in order to be able to deal with a potential critical incident or crisis situation. Is that correct, sir?
That's right. That's my understanding.
And I think if I could just add, Commissioner Steinberg, if I could just add, I think that the words off-duty and overtime and interlocals, they get used interchangeably and they're very different. For example, I've heard reference to the school board officers that are assisting us on Collins Avenue as off-duty, and those are not off-duty. That's a function of an interlocal. They're here serving in a capacity. They're actually on our streets working on our behalf. I think when a private entity hires an off-duty, it's a very different relationship. And so there are different things, there are different rates, and in a strange way, the rates compete with each other, which is what makes it difficult at times to be able to fill the off-duties, because we have so much need in this community for officers, and we use our officers almost every single weekend and through multiple events, that at some point there just aren't enough officers to be available for off duties.
I understand that and I appreciate that. I guess I would just suggest that we take a look at the MOU to see where we should be amending it so that we can hopefully cover what it is we're looking to do. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Minor?
That's a good point. Chief, I just wanted to follow up on something. The Miami-Dade school police that we have now, the 25 on Collin, do they have enforcement powers?
Their primary responsibility is the school, but they are, again, my understanding of it is they do have countywide jurisdiction because they are employed by Miami-Dade.
No, but we have 25 officers on the weekends along Collins. Do they? I thought you mentioned that they are basically citizens in uniform. They do not have enforcement powers.
I'm sorry, that goes back to the private entity. As the manager said, we're inviting them in to help us as a municipality to assist with visibility on a corridor. The difference between that and working for an establishment is that they would be employed in theory by that establishment or reimbursed by that establishment. And again, going back to my original point about that, some chiefs don't want that. Some chiefs don't want to take on that liability associated with working.
I'm not talking about off duty. We've hired 25 Miami-Dade school police. They're not off duty. They're not hired by an establishment. They're hired by the city of Miami Beach. Do they have enforcement powers?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so they're in essence, for the purposes of when they're working here, they have the same enforcement powers as any Miami Beach police officer?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask. And I just wanted to follow up on something the mayor mentioned, and I think the mayor mentioned this last time too. It does take a lot of time for officers when we're processing arrests, which is why you and I have had several conversations about utilizing mobile arrest processing centers. I actually have put an item on the commission agenda so we can discuss that and explore that further, but I won't take time talking about it now.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
So the next item, next slide, we can get the presentation back up, is the beach reentry program. So we had a robust discussion on this one regarding the technical issues with the databases used by the license plate readers. One is more for general law enforcement. The ones police uses, the ones we're talking about here, are more like parking related because they access the resident database. And so I think we didn't have enough time in just the 3 or 4 business days that we had before this meeting, but police and parking are following up with each of those software vendors, and we're hoping to have a good answer for you either through an LTC or at least by the first public hearing on September 17th to try to bring that cost down.
Chairman, can I? So let me address this because I think I was the one that had the question and the most concern about it. I spent some time at police yesterday, and so my point was we have an asset and we should be able to use it for dual purposes by plugging in different databases. But as they explained and we discussed yesterday during a reentry, they don't want to unplug, and I think you raised this point, Commissioner Miner, they don't want to unplug the database they're using to try to catch the bad guys. So I'm satisfied with that response, and unless other members have any questions, I don't have any reason to review this anymore. I would just ask that the new license plate readers that we buy, that police try to use those in addition to the ones that are already deployed to look for the bad guys when they're not being used for reentry. So with that, I don't have any other questions. Thanks.
Okay. Colleagues?
Well, I just want to make sure we're still trying to figure out a way. I mean, this weekend, I'm a resident.
We're absolutely moving forward. I mean, the plan was to move forward. My only question is whether or not we need the asset or whether or not we could use
another
asset. And so I've been satisfied that we need the assets. And so I don't have any more questions on this.
Yeah, I'll just take the opportunity to tell the public that this weekend the license plate readers are up, and there's going to be, although they start at 4, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they go to the early morning, they're going to be on the 5th Street and 41st Street. Please don't get caught in the evening, especially after 9:30. Is that when there's going to be one lane? It's going to be really slow on 5th Street and the MacArthur and Julia Tuttle. Take the Venetian, take 71st Street, or you're going to spend hours waiting because it's going to be a difficult trip coming eastbound on those two corridors.
Okay, so let's move on to the next item, the CAT network. So this item was for staff to recommend an amount, both in 21 and in 22. And so we took a hard look at the program. This program started back in 2012 with a grant from PetSmart of approximately $75,000 to $80,000. And so it was in place until 2019. So it dried up the last 2 years. And so we feel that it's reasonable to replace that amount, $75,000, and make up the difference in 22, which is only $29,000 from the amount that we had initially recommended. And then it looks like they're having a lot of issues in 21 here, especially from COVID-related issues with pets. So we felt it was appropriate to also make up that difference of $34,000 in 21. So in both years, they would get a total of $75,000 of support. Any questions about that one?
Everyone okay? All right, great job.
Okay. Next slide. So we had some discussion about the enhancement for implementation of the Cultural Affairs Strategic Plan. So that enhancement request has been removed from the budget at this point.
Let me, if I could just add a point to that. So we talked about doing it the following year on an as-needed basis. So I would just like to ask the administration to let's make an effort over the next year to make our best internal effort to try to put together a plan, and then let's see what pieces of the plan we might need to, some help with so that we could maybe do that in the following fiscal year. So I think that we should have that as a goal.
Thank you, Commissioner and Chair, for raising your concerns, and I have some ideas of how we could perhaps get some pro bono assistance in that.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to the next item. The American Black Film Festival. So the discussion was to check if the city could be some kind of host sponsor for the two events in FY22 and hopefully include some kind of community benefits. And so the recommendation there is to contribute $100,000 for each of the two events, so that's a total of $200,000 in 2022. At the official sponsorship level, that's the $100,000 level. And so then the 23 requests would go through the new special events guidelines process that we just put in place too soon to be able to evaluate the 22 requests through.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First off, I'm very pleased that we are finding this level of funding. I believe Jeff Friday, who is the leader of this organization, made the trip from California. I see him a few rows back. I would ask the chair if we might recognize Mr. Friday just for a minute or two. A couple things are on my mind. I'd love to hear the headlines on why this fine organization for 20-plus years has chosen Miami Beach. And second, that's a lot of money, a couple $100,000. And I would like to hear a little bit about the public benefits, whether it's community engagement, production, telling the story of what's going on. So if that's okay, Mr. Chair, I would love to invest a couple minutes on that.
Sure. You want Mr. Friday to come up here?
Please.
Yep, come on up. Especially if you're – are you coming from California, I heard? Amazing. Well, absolutely. Well, great. Even better. Yeah. Like most smart Californians, you're coming to Florida.
There you go.
And my happy place. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for having me. A quick bit about the festival. I founded the festival in 1997 when I was 10 years old. You can do the math. The first 5 years were in Acapulco, Mexico. I was an advertising exec in New York, very disturbed, discomforted by the lack of diversity in the film and TV industry. Our American audiences looked like one thing, and TV and movies looked like something else. I took this venture. The first 5 years were in Acapulco, Mexico. There's a gentleman named David Whitaker, who is now back as the head of the GMCVB, who flew to Acapulco, Mexico, and asked me to come here. That's how I got here. In 2002, we came to Miami for the very first time, became my happy place. Our audience loves it, and we've been here 17 of the 25 years. We've left twice, and I want to be very honest about why. Money. Very expensive to get celebrities to leave their cushy homes and come to Miami. We went to L.A. for 2 years, and we went to New York 2 years, solely driven by economics. I have a African-American-owned company. My wife and I own our company. We have 6 employees. And to be very frank, we struggle to do this every year. And so what I've been very clear and frank about is it's not hard. It's difficult to raise the money to bring this event here. So my original request was driven by, we love it here. This is our 25th anniversary. We'll be back, God willing. We're coming in November, November 3rd through 7th. We plan to stay here for as long as I'm doing this. Black celebrities, 90% African-American audience, very proud of the type of audience that comes here. And I also would recommend, to the degree that you're willing, that the city lean into us more to help drive the kind of relationship with black people and black culture that it pains me to see some of the images that I see on television. I don't want to pretend I don't see them. I do. And I want to be a part of the solution. So we're happy to be here, and you know that's our request. I don't want to go, but I know Commissioner had another question.
No, that's all wonderful, and I would just pick up on what you said about that we try and lean into this event, either from a communications standpoint. Clearly, we have a strong production industry group, and we want to do that. Jeff, I would ask you to explore opportunities to engage with our residents. And frankly, I, as a partner, I would ask that you work with us and help with us to tell the story of our community and how inclusive we are and how we seek to reach out. As I like to say, everyone's welcome in Miami Beach. And I think your event is a great example, and perhaps you personally could help us.
Sure. I'm willing to, and I've offered to do that many times. In fact, as it relates to film production, one of the challenges here are the incentives in the state of Florida. Well aware of that. And I've worked with the GMCVB. We've done a film familiarization tour. We brought filmmakers from L.A. and New York to Miami. We worked with Connie and team and Bill and Rolando and team. So we've been very active in the community. In fact, my proposal has a community benefit element. What we were planning to do was to bring what we call business of entertainment seminars to the beach. So the festival would be here once a year. This year it's in November because of COVID, but we're going back to our regular cycle of June. It's actually Father's Day weekend. I'd like you all to come and be a part of it. But we do have a plan to do quarterly or quarterly seminars where we could basically bring information about how to get into the business for young people or not so young people, but very dialed into the responsibility that we would have to bring a community benefit here. We are not here just doing an event. We really consider ourselves a platform to help you guys have a better relationship with the African-American community. And that's my commitment.
It's nice to see you again.
Good to see you, man.
So in the budget we have 200. Is that basically for the year? So let me ask you, what about, I know there are rules about other funding organizations. Is the county, I've had a bunch of times where Super Bowl and other groups that are coming here, and frankly, we ought to treat you as an anchor cultural event in the same way we treat some of the groups that, Art Basel is probably the biggest, but we have others also that when they come here, they expect us to help out because we think it's good for our community. And I believe this for some time since I first met with you and gone to the events, that it is it is consistent with sort of our who we are, but also who we aspire to be, which is really a cultural capital more than anything else. And so I think it's very consistent. But my question is, have you been able to get some of the other county, because it's not just our city, your reach is far further than Miami Beach. So has the county been able to help? I know there are rules. If you get from some, you're not allowed to get from the others, but I don't know that is the case here. Have you been able to get to access funding from them as well? And can we help you do that?
Yeah, sounds like sure you know Whitaker. If the BCA is the county. But we have received support from the BCA over the last 7 or 8 years, approximately $28,000 to $35,000.
What are they giving you?
$28,000 is just kind of a sliding scale, as I understand it, from a pool, and there are a number of organizations that submit.
Right.
$28,000 to $35,000 a year. But I've also been informed that if you accept sponsorship from the city, then you also can. I don't know if that's in effect yet, but
yeah, there are rules.
You can't do both now.
You can't get both, but there are other. But I think we can probably try to help you anyway to try to sort of expand the pot of support you have. Mm-hmm. Because it's a worthy event, and it works for our city, and it fits who we are. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Commissioner Richin?
Yeah, I have a question. Thanks so much. Thanks for traveling to chat with us.
Sure.
I just have a question about, I know in this current fiscal year, you're going to do two events to make up for the one that you didn't do. And I don't know if that's set in stone or if I'm a little bit concerned that one event might peel off attendance from the other event just because someone might say, hey, I was just in Miami Beach at this event. So, are the two events definitely, the reason I ask is because I think what we're doing is making a commitment for $100,000, for $200,000 in the fiscal year.
I understand.
And so I would just put out there that I think that's what our commitment is for the fiscal year. And if you were to decide that you're only going to do one event in the fiscal year, I think we could revisit the funding. So, but are you definitely going to have two events?
That's the plan. This November event is replacing the June event that just passed.
Right.
So there was some discussion, and if COVID rages, to be very frank, we might have to change our plans.
That's another reason I'm asking the question.
So we don't know what's happening. But should that happen, the shift or the pivot would be we would not do an event this year in 2021, and we would postpone our 25th anniversary to June of 2022. We do not want to do that. Our audience missed 2020, and people want to come back. My sponsors want to come back. Our audience wants to come back, but we've got to be safe first.
Right.
But it's great to know. I understand the fiscal year, right? So it's great to know that should we be forced to do that, then we have the option of using those resources for the 20s.
I think you'd have to come back and talk to us.
Oh, really?
I think that's what, I know that when we had the meeting last week, we had to do some additional work, but there was some suggestion that we might be at the 200,000 level. But I'm very satisfied with the administration's recommendation. That's why I asked the question, because you may not have the November event, or it may look something different. The other thing I'd like you to do is, to Commissioner Samuelin's point about public benefit, you know, I don't think we're asking you for specifics today, but I think if in the coming months you could work with our community to be more specific about what types of public benefits, you know, we could receive for our community, whether it's an afternoon engagement with some of our seniors or something like that. Just think about that, or maybe some tickets to a special screening or something like that.
We have plans for all that, including internships for young people. So willing to do whatever works for you guys.
Welcome to Miami Beach.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Commissioner Gongora has his hand up as well. Commissioner Gongora?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Oh, there he is. I see him.
Yeah, we can.
Okay, wonderful. Hey, Jeff, how are you? It's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
I remember it was wonderful welcoming you. I believe it was at the June 2019 American Black Film Festival at New World Symphony. So I've been a supporter for a long time. I think this is a great start and a great partnership. I had the benefit of that year of seeing firsthand the wonderful response you have. Can't remember the movie. I think it might have been Shaft, but I wouldn't swear to it.
It was.
So you had the... It was? Okay. You had, like, the whole cast there, and you had such a wonderful turnout. It was packed. I remember you did events at the Bass and at various hotels throughout the city of Miami Beach. There is a public benefit because you draw in a huge amount of people that fly here. They stay in our hotels. They go out to dinner. They spend money in our city, and I think that the festival is a really good fit for Miami Beach. So I'm happy to support this request.
Thank you, sir.
Jeff, thank you for continuing to invest in our city. I have attended your festival a couple times, and it's world class. I mean, it makes us as a city proud and makes us look good. And so this is an investment that, you know, I've been hopeful we would have made, you know, over the past several years. So I'm glad that we're finally here. Let us know what more we can do.
I will.
You know, obviously we all have connections, and you know, if you are making this, hopefully your personal long term home. You know, there's a lot of resources in this community that I think would love to invest in seeing this film festival get to the next level. So let's take advantage of the moment and help you get to the next level.
Thank you for your support over the years, too, and vice versa. Let us know. We don't have all the answers. You know, let us know what we can do to help make this a better situation.
Yeah, I look forward to this continued partnership. I know we all do. And, you know, I think this is already one of the marquee festivals on the circuit, but you know, let's help you get it to the next level in any way we can.
Okay, thank you all.
The one thing is, just don't ever let the mayor be on some kind of selection committee for the movies, because you know we
okay, let's get the. Yeah, so let's move on to the enhanced code enforcement. So we talked about the staffing potentially to do proactive code enforcement for short-term rentals. So that came up, and so staff took a look at that, came back with a recommendation of 3 new code enforcement officers. We were able to get to approximately 5,000 hours of effort, which was something that came up during the discussion. And also, this enhancement was, along with the 6 other code enforcement folks we were talking about, dedicated team in the ADCD, that we would fund them very similar that we did to the 17 cops, right? Where it would be done over a 3-year period, it would be reevaluated, and we would see what the results were before making them permanent. Any questions about this?
I thank you, John, for doing the work on this, and we had quite a discussion the last time, and I talked to Hernan a couple of days ago about this, and I'm very satisfied that we can add these 3 dedicated to Airbnb and or short-term rentals, and our target is 5,000 hours, so I just ask the administration to make sure that you collect the data in such a way that a year from now when we're revisiting this, we can be assured that we did get a 5,000 or something close to that contact hours specifically targeted for this issue. And I'm glad that we're going to do it the way we're funding the the police officers so that we can reevaluate it. So thanks for doing the work on this, and thanks to Ernan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Richardson, for advancing this concept. I fully support it. Short-term rentals is something we hear about community-wide, and I'm glad today we're taking action. I know we have issues in lots of neighborhoods, but, you know, we recently, hot off the press, heard from the South of Fifth Neighborhood Association that they're really having some issues in terms of enforcement as it relates to short-term rentals. So the fact that we're adding a headcount of plus three dedicated to short-term rentals, I hope that means they get some relief. And as I said, it's a citywide issue, but that's one area of late we've heard a lot is the South of Fifth Neighborhood. I appreciate everything we could do to make sure our laws are fully being enforced. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let me see if I have any colleagues who have their hands up. Commissioner Gongora, your hand is still up. Is that a leftover? Commissioner Gongora? Okay, it went down. Okay, John.
Okay.
Continue.
It's down.
All right, let's go to the next slide. So we talked about the Flamingo Park Slow Streets program and that the operating cost of $137,000 felt high. And so we went back, scrubbed that. And so we felt that by replacing signage at some locations with roadway markings, because some locations are more important than others, it turns out, reducing the signage to maybe one per block and reducing the frequency of data collection, we're able to get that cost down to $75,000, but it will take an additional one-time cost of $37,000 to get the roadway markings in place.
Let me, Chair, if I could, because I raised concerns, and this is my neighborhood. I'm glad that we've reevaluated this. We have to do a better job of making sure that the signs get replaced on the street. So a week ago, somebody ran over the signs, intentionally probably, outside my home. And so for a week, the cardboard's just been on the ground in for both sides. So 7 days I've been driving past that. So we have to do a better job of getting the street litter, because that's what it's become, street litter. And we just have to do a better job. So I hope that this money will be spent on ensuring that the signs look good and the planters look good, and we're not planning on spending $70,000 or $80,000 to do data collection, because I think that would be foolhardy. So let's try to focus on making the signs look good. Thanks.
Agreed.
Okay. Okay. All right, let's go to the next slide. So we had a chart at the last meeting where we showed non-public safety positions and how they'd gone down by about 80 positions in the last 4 or 5 years. And so I think the question that came up was, all right, well, that sounds good, but what about the actual payroll piece of this thing? So we went back, ran those numbers, and you can kind of see here that it more or less mirrors what we had on the other chart, and the 21 is down 7.4% or 6 million less than 2017. So, we put up these charts. I just want to make sure that there's some credibility there, that you feel good about them. And we can always, get deeper and get some more detail. But
John, so where's the money going? Our top line has grown since 2017. So if you're telling me payroll's gone down, then where's the money going? If you don't have the answer, get back to me. But
So the budget did go down in 21 dramatically, frankly, just because of COVID, if nothing else. And then we did cut 48 positions last year. So it's real, it's not fake, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But there might be some offsetting factors sometimes that kind of make it feel like it's not a direct correlation. But I'm happy to, dig into that deeper and try to establish that, credibility and confidence.
Even pre-COVID, we always hear the same thing, oh, payroll's going down and headcount's going down, okay. But we know tax receipts up until COVID were also going up. So, something doesn't totally square, but we can take that offline.
Yeah, I would just say part of that is the normal inflation, that our inflation's higher than maybe you would think it is, because we have pensions, we have medical insurance costs.
Correct.
We have the three-year collective bargaining agreements.
Correct.
And so those, I'm guessing, is probably what's skewing, this in terms of a direct correlation, but
100%. That's a big part of it, right? So we know
what is 60 plus percent, but it's 60% of our overall.
It's at least 75%.
Expenditures goes to sort
it's
of first.
It's at least 75%.
Is it 75%?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, just first responder, police and fire, it's 60%, right?
Yes, right. And so this is net of police and fire, so we didn't do
right.
that. I mean, we did a separate chart there, and because we have been increasing positions and so on, you can see that that has been going up. But we're just focused more on that non-public safety side, which because it is starting to impact our administrative capacity.
That's where I'm ultimately going with this, right? Because COVID, exposed our vulnerability. We were able to, work our way out through the talent of this team as well as the federal CARES money. But we have a situation where, a huge part of our budget just continues to go up and up and up. This year, with our property taxes essentially flat to down a little bit, and we've talked about this before, if our property tax receipts don't average at least 3%, we're always going to be starting at an imbalance, at a deficit. I'm hopeful that next year with some of these, property transactions that have happened, our overall property values will have gone up. But to the extent that that ever stops, right, our revenues will flatten or go down, our costs continue to go up. And, you mentioned where a big bulk of it's coming from, and we need to have a strategy for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, just a couple questions, because you mentioned that chart was headcount, and you gave a couple examples, I think pensions being one of them. Just two points of information. One, this year, what's in the budget for pensions?
I don't have it memorized. We could look it up. 70 million right now. I mean, we had some trend charts, I believe, and I think it was the budget retreat presentation or the operating presentation. We have charts.
No, I know
that
you
show,
did.
How those numbers have been. And frankly, they've been better than normal, I guess, because of the performance of the stock market. So that could easily go the wrong way if there's ever a big stock market correction.
Well, that's right. And so this year, 7-0, if I heard you correctly. And then I know we had the trend charts. Do we know offhand last year? Because I'm looking for the delta, because my colleague's talking about growth. So if it's 70 this year, what was it last year?
I think we could look it up while we're keep going here, and then we probably just need like 15 minutes to
That's
just
fine.
Take a quick
okay,
break.
Okay, I'm just really for the record. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next slide. Okay, so we were asked to make a recommendation regarding potential funding for homeless trusts and domestic violence. So you'll probably remember that back in FY 2020, we had allocated short-term rental fines money of $125,000 each for each of these items. And so after that, the plan was to try to do that from resort taxes, replace it, and then grow it over time. And so, of course, since 2020, resort taxes have had major issues related to COVID. So we haven't seen a normal amount of resort tax, much less a growth in resort tax. So we didn't initially recommend this, but now we've added both of those as an enhancement here, $125,000 each coming from resort tax.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you. This action I fully support, but it tees up the overall issue of homelessness. If we go back to our community survey we recently did, and we looked at the areas of importance with opportunities to improve, homelessness was really off the charts. It was one of the biggest areas. So for me, and I think I speak for many of my colleagues, we want to do everything we can around that issue. So I'm circling around to the issue specifically of homeless folks with mental health issues, the Lazarus pilot, which we tried. I had heard that they have had success in other locations. I think City of Miami was doing it. I know we tried it. We even at one point, I thought at a committee, there was some degree of support, but now our homeless committee is saying it's not in the budget. So could you please talk to that? Because I know there's some people who feel very passionate about that. And if that's not the right program, I'd like to hear plan B of what the other program is, because if we need funding for mental health issues for the homeless, I would really like to see what we can do, colleagues.
Thank you, Richard. So I remember we did have some conversation in finance about this at one point. And so what I would propose, and it seems that there are different
office.
Differing opinions on whether or not this particular program is successful. And so what I would like to do is if the administration could come to us in September and give us a briefing, I'd like to hear from the parties so that we can decide if this program is effective or it's not effective. And to your point, Commissioner Samuelin, if it's not effective, is there another program that we can implement to address the issue? I don't know enough about the issue, to be honest with you, and I keep hearing different things from different, you know, the advocates think it's a wonderful program. I think that we have some concerns internally about whether or not the program is effective. So it would be beneficial for me if you want to do that, Madam Manager, in private briefings, I would be satisfied with that, or if you want to do it at a September meeting. But I need to be more informed on the issue. And so I would ask, I'm not prepared today to make a decision on this particular issue. I do think that we should make a decision before we implement the budget in October 1st. But I need to be more informed. So is that something, Madam Manager, that before the September meeting, before we go to public, that you could get with us either individually or have your staff do that?
We would be happy to do that. Just for clarification, the allocations here are separate and apart from the $100,000 that we've made available in past budgets to the Lazarus program. That program is currently, I believe, John, correct me if I'm wrong, in this budget, not funded.
Correct. Okay. So, Madam Manager, before the September, when we go to public hearing on this,
definitely.
Can we look at this? I'd like to leave this as an open item for now and then be more informed, if that's possible.
Commissioner Samuel? No, I agree. I'd like to learn more. I'd like to see the cost benefit. I'd like to see what Plan B is. I think we're talking $100,000. So if we can get the facts on the best approach to this, I'm all for that. So I support what Commissioner Richardson said.
And if staff could give us what's being done in other communities. Is the program successful in other communities? If it is, why is it not successful here, if that is the belief? So thank you.
I see Commissioner Gongora has his hand up, and then there's some folks from the public who have their hands up.
Yes, thank you very much. Number one, I do support the item that we started with, the supplement of the $125,000 for the programs. I think it's important. I'm a little confused because I thought that Lazarus went from the commission to neighborhoods, and we approved it, and then sent it to finance, and then I thought finance approved it, and then I thought the commission adopted that recommendation on consent and the funding was there. So I'm not sure how the Lazarus program got unfunded. What is the total dollar amount of the Lazarus program on a yearly basis?
$100,000.
Okay. Well, I think that we should put a placeholder of an additional $100,000 in the budget, potentially for the Lazarus program, assuming that we all feel satisfied as to that it works. And if not, we should just use that additional money as well for additional homeless programs.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. Colleagues, anything? There's some folks in the public that want to speak. Would you like to speak?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for your time today. My name is Lori Bauckham. I'm here as the chairperson for the Homeless Committee for the City of Miami Beach. We thank you for your time today. The issue of mental health care for especially our chronic homeless population has been at the forefront of what the community and our committee, which is made up of community members, feels needs to be more addressed. The Lazarus program did have some success. It, however, fell because of its calendar year and COVID into a point where the reporting seemed to be not as successful. We worked with staff all year long. They worked with Camilla's House to change the program into a manner that our homeless staff could support, and those changes were made. And at the homeless committee meeting on the 13th, it was our understanding that it was being recommended. We do know it's a very difficult budget year, and we're very happy for the other funding that's happening for the homeless trust and for the domestic violence. All these things are issues that are important. Whether it's Lazarus Project or another, the committee very strongly feels that there must be funding and very specific support for providing mental health services for our homeless community. The difference with the Lazarus Project is that it is run through Camilla's House with a dedicated group of professionals that are able to give medication to people before they enter services. This component and why it's worked in other places is that many of our chronic homeless, and these are people identified by city staff and city PD that work with the homeless outreach, are not well enough to accept services. So I'm not a professional in mental health. We leave that to the professionals, but we hope that there is a will and a budget to address this item. Thank you very much.
Lori, before you, thank you, first of all, for coming this morning. Look, you know, as I just said, I need to be more informed. Mm-hmm. So do you know why is this particular program seems to be so controversial? Why is it that some people think it's a wonderful program and other people think that it doesn't have the same high value? Why is it, if you know?
I don't know in particular. I do know that it's been an agenda item on our committee every single month for almost 2 years. So we get updates on it. There's been no program now. I mean, it hasn't been happening since COVID. The initial program, as it was approved as a pilot, ended up having fewer number, and I don't have the number in front of me, success rate, they call it. So it wasn't recommended. We found out later through staff and discussions with them that part of why it wasn't recommended is because it would eat into their budget, and there were some problems with the program and the way it was being administered that they felt could be done better. So we took their recommendations, and that was then the new program would be based on the recommendations from the Miami Beach staff of how that, and they worked with Camilla's House staff. And I can get you a report, I'm sure, on more of the specifics of that. I don't want to misspeak on that. But that's how it was presented to us, and that those recommendations, and that Maria was able to work with the head of Camilla's House to address the issues that they had, and that it would be recommended as a budget enhancement of $100,000.
Okay. Thank you. And so in the time before we meet back in September, if you and or the committee have other programs that you think we should look at, you should give us a call individually and let us know, because I do want to dive into this a little bit more to see. It does seem like there are very mixed feelings about this. And also the money that Commissioner Gongora mentioned and we've mentioned, it was my understanding when that was heard previously, was stopgap funding for the current fiscal 21 year because it was not funded initially in the budget. But if the program has not been ongoing, it raises another question whether or not that money was spent or it may not have been spent. So colleagues, I would say to John, you're trying to do a budget. We get that. And you want to try to get as much decided today as possible. So what I would suggest is let's go ahead and put a $100,000 placeholder in the budget for mental health and homelessness, and then we can decide how we think it would be best to spend that money, whether or not it's on this program or a different program. But the issue needs to be addressed.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think Commissioner Samuel, you agreed with that.
I do.
Commissioner Gongora, is your hand still up? Okay. Let's move over. I don't see Commissioner Gongora. Is your hand still up? Okay, he's taking it down. There's some hands up from folks in the public. Valerie Navarette, then Mr. Ron Book, and then Mr. Wayne Roberts.
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me? Oh, hi, hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Valerie Navarrete. I would like to give you a couple of information and answer Commissioner Richardson's questions. First of all, this item was brought up after being brought up to the commission last year. It was back to neighborhood on December 16. It was the item 13, and there is a video where it shows that was approved by Commissioner Steinberg, Gongora, and Maynard. And then it was sent to financial for February 19, item 11. And there is a video where it was approved by Commissioner Samuelian, Richardson, and Uriola. And then it went to the commission meeting on March 17, item C6B-11, which was unanimously approved by the commission. To respond Commissioner Richardson's question, why this is so controversial, I have the answer, honey. Thank you. It's very simple. When this program was first drafted on paper, it was requested to be at least 50% successful. Now, at the beginning, 10 names were chosen by Maria's office and PD, and those would be the 10 people to be treated by the Lazarus Project. Nonetheless, because it takes a lot of time to build up confidence with the homeless population for them to accept treatment, the Camino's House Lazarus Project extended, instead of treating only those, you know, focusing on those 10 people only, they're focusing citywide. So citywide speaking, which was more than just the 10 people initially drafted on paper, they got a success of 52%. And that's why it's so controversial, because if you look at Maria's number, she counts only on those 10 people. From those 10 people, just a couple accepted, you know, services and were medicated or something. So that brings a low percentage. But if you look with a wider mind, you can see that the Camilo's treated a lot more people, and this is the success rate was at over 50%, which was acceptable by the
Valerie, city. We're having 2 minutes for public speakers, so if you can wrap up, please.
Well, this was already approved by you guys. I don't understand why administration just ignored your decisions. I find that very disrespectful to you, the commission, and to us, the public, the constituent, the taxpayers. And the program is successful, and Commissioner Richardson, the only program so far in the Miami-Dade area for the mentally ill is the Lazarus Project.
Okay, thank you.
So,
Mr. Chair, just to address the point, it was approved, as I said, for stopgap funding for fiscal year 21. It wasn't approved for the infinite future, so that's why we're going to revisit it.
Like we do with most programs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Ron, are you on? Ron, I take yourself off mute.
And Mr. Chair.
Ron.
Hello?
Ron, and I know you're you're very eloquent, but brevity is not your gift. We're trying to keep it 2 minutes.
It's not, but I'm going to try to.
We're trying to keep it 2 minutes. If you need a little extra, we'll give you a little extra. I don't want you to get cut off, but we're trying to get
through. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Let me take off my script for a minute to Lazarus, which I wasn't going to speak to, but just for a second. I'm not sure why it's defined as controversial. Let me simply say this. We piloted Lazarus about 5 or 6 years ago. This chairman is cheap and frugal and uses a rubber band to stretch our budget. Mr. Chair, I know you know that. And I can simply say to you that what the Lazarus Project does by going out to the streets, seeing the folks on the streets, getting them their meds, 50% of the problem with folks that suffer from mental health issues is finding the right prescription. The second toughest part, as Judge Lightman would tell you, is getting them to take their meds with frequency. If we're taking meds to people on the streets, they're safer as a result of it. The community is safer as a result of it. And our percentage chances of getting those individuals through the outreach teams to agree to come in when they are stable and lucid is significantly greater. Period. End of story. We spend about $635,000 on Lazarus a year. We think it's a great program. We think you all are benefited from it. I'm happy to answer questions. Let me get to the $125,000 for just a minute. We've used the money for rapid rehousing. We got off to a slow start, obviously, because of COVID. But we have clearly met what we believe was the purpose of the funding. First of all, I can use as an example a 48-year-old Hispanic male from Miami Beach who was evicted, lost his job in 2019. During that same period of time, he became estranged from his son. At the end of the day, we got him at Camilla's house. We got him housed. He's reconnected with his son. He's in a stable place. His case manager continues to work towards his long-term housing solution. We've got six other clients we've referred for housing using the Miami Beach allocation with the goal of serving approximately 12 households with the funds provided. In total, the trust has referred 148 homeless or formerly homeless households living on Miami Beach to permanent housing since March 1st, 2020, with 87 individuals securing housing. Of the 148 referrals, the following households have already moved into a unit: 46 rapidly housing, 36 permanent supportive housing, 3 other permanent housing. And during the pandemic, we've used an aggressive quarantine and isolation program all off of the beach. More than 265 individual clients have been placed off of the beach into our Q&I program. All clients that have entered Q&I are provided basic toiletries, 3 meals a day, primary care, case management, and the like. And I might add that together with our rapid rehousing for the short and long-term rental assistance that we're doing, we also provide the services along with it. And we would urge you to reappropriate the $125,000. We need it. We serve the folks that we make a difference on. And to just go back to Lazarus for a minute, happy to answer any questions on how Lazarus works. I can simply tell you, a stable, chronic homeless individual suffering from mental health issues is better with Lazarus than with not.
Thanks, Ron. Okay, next caller is Wayne Roberts, and then followed by Shelley Glasgow Wilson.
Good morning, Ricky. I just want to share a personal experience 3 or 4, maybe 5 years ago. I actually saw somebody on the street I knew. He'd been on the street for 6 months. He was dirty. His clothes were ragged. And he was suffering from schizophrenia from the ages of the mid-20s, when it's most commonly occurring in humans. And I took him to the Gap. I got him some clothes. I bought him some food. And I walked him to the office near Lincoln Road that, I don't know if it still exists, that offered help for the homeless. There was a building somewhere near Lincoln Road. And I walked him over there. A car picked him up and brought him to Camilla House, but he was already cleaned. I showered him. I don't know if this is legal. I showered him on the beach showers, and gave him the clothes and changed there. But so they picked him up and took him to Camilla House, and he spent, I don't know, maybe 2 to 3 months there, took his meds, got healthy. We got his family from New York involved, and he now resides in New York with his family where he belongs. I mean, I do know he suffers from schizophrenia, but the medication controls it. And he's with family. And, you know, it's difficult. You know, I think it was successful because I followed him over to Camilla House. I followed him for weeks and months. I visited him. It's a difficult process to take care of a very sick individual that's basically dying on the streets. And, you know, 150 grand ain't going to cover it. And we need to get them connected with their families. We got to get them off our streets because it's costing us many, many, many millions. And it's costing quality of life for the residents to see people suffer like that and have to deal with it. So, you know, I don't even think 150K is nearly enough to deal with the homeless. I don't know how much money we dedicate to it. But if it's only $150,000 a year, it's insanely low based on our population problem of homeless. Thank you. Have a great morning.
Okay. Shelley Ann Glasgow.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Shelley Glasgow Wilson. I'm director of grants at Camilla's House.
I just wanted to weigh in from our perspective on the Lazarus program. COVID did affect our ability to serve and to go out in the field. But we did continue to go out, even without contract, to serve persons in Miami Beach. Even when the homeless office was closed, we continue to be willing to work with this population. And just to say, the reason the program in the city is so successful is that we've been at it for a few years now. Some of these people can take over a year, 2 years, or longer to become engaged and to build the trust and the rapport that is needed to serve them. We stand behind our model. We would like to continue to implement our model that's successful in the city. We think it can be just as successful at Miami Beach. And we thank you for continuing to consider the item.
Thank you. Okay, I think that concludes all the public comment on this item. John, do you have the direction that you need?
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's proceed.
Okay. So next item, 40-year recertifications. I believe Commissioner Steinberg wanted to make sure that if we needed any additional funding, whether it's in 22 budget or even right now, to deal with some of the issues that we're dealing with, that we would have that. So we checked with the building department. No new funding is recommended since most of that enhanced workload is happening now. And to help with the now, we've hired some structural engineers. We have a contract with them. And we also have existing professional services contracts that are being used now and can be used in 22 for any potential workload issues. But we'll continue to closely monitor the situation. And if there's something that could be helped with additional resources, we would not hesitate to do that.
Colleagues, Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Chair. So, John, I think this is the last item on the operating budget. So my question to you is, do you have any open items at this point related to the operating budget, or do you have everything you need, the guidance that you need to put together the first budget in September for the public hearing? Do you need anything else from us?
The only items that I would like to get a little direction on are the ones that we scheduled after this budget update, which were floating around in the Finance Committee. And so there's five of those. I think they wouldn't take very long, so I would encourage the full commission to stay, I would like, ideally. So then that way we could get everyone the benefit of everyone's input so that when we come back in September, we're not just only hearing from the committee, we're also seeing, you know, getting input from everyone.
Are you prepared to talk about those five today?
Yeah, they're scheduled after this presentation.
And I don't know, Chair, if you want, would you entertain? Can we just go ahead and do those now so we can roll out finish up the...
Can I finish this presentation?
Yep.
If you don't mind, there's not a whole lot more. Is that okay?
Then we'll circle back. Okay.
Okay, so let's go through the next slide here. So the gap. So what happened here, all these little moves and shakes, really the only recurring item was really the enhanced CAT network contribution for the general fund. So we're still in good shape here. Next slide. For the reserve, we just updated the reserve here so you can kind of see where we're at. It's like a running tally, if you will. So we're still in pretty good shape. We're still almost at that level that we had pre-COVID. Next slide. On the resort tax side, there was a little bit more movement of items, so that's where you see that the reserves changed a little bit more. So that's down to $13 million, but again, that's pretty consistent with the pre-COVID reserve, so we feel comfortable with that. So on the capital side, this is more of an FYI, I suppose. So we talked a lot about the 72nd Street Complex project. It's one of the most, you know, biggest projects we have in the city. And so we got some direction. And so the plan here is to hear the item at the July 30th Finance Committee meeting so we can talk a little bit about, based on the direction you gave us on July 16th, what would be kind of the next step so you can kind of see what that contract could look like. What you know, because it wouldn't be you know, as traditional as others. In other words, we don't have the $17.7 million that we need in hand. So how would we proceed if you want to proceed without having that money in hand? And then based on that discussion, hopefully be queued up for the September commission meeting or the October one at the latest with the next step. Yes, sir.
Commissioner Hamilton. Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, that sounds like a fine action. I look forward to it. But I'm going to take an opportunity here to ensure that we follow the will of our neighborhoods committee and link these conversations vis-a-vis the Byron Carlisle. I'm going to repeat a couple things I said at that committee. And, you know, that property has been part of our portfolio for almost 20 years. We have a property that we cannot use. We have a property that I hear the word condemned used. And we need to fix that. We need to find funding for that. And why I'm bringing this up on this slide is I supported the geobond. I supported the 72nd Street project. That was a $57 million commitment that we made to the voters. We have to deliver. But this project's now up over $100 million. And we've had to sign a contract. And we've had to put a shovel in the ground. The mayor and I kid about over and unders. Anyone want to take the under on what happens once the project actually gets going? So I'm extremely concerned that we are pulling funds to this project. And then we're going to wake up one day and say, well, how do we fix the Byron Carlisle? And we're going to be without funding. So I believe we need a holistic approach that looks at our primary capital projects that require funding and the primary sources of funding and link them. And I'll let the Neighborhoods Committee speak for themselves because they voted unanimously that this should be a priority. And I think we need to have that conversation. And I do not want to allocate more funds to the garage till I also see that we're going to address the Byron Carlisle. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let me speak to that. So this is probably an area where Commissioner Samuel and I see the world differently. So I'm okay to have it as a priority, but not the priority. So I previously stated that my priority for capital projects in the city of Miami Beach right now is the 72nd Street project, because I believe strongly that you work on projects that have the most impact to the community as possible. And so when you compare these two projects, the 72nd Street project would have a much greater impact to a much larger group of people than the Byron Carlisle. And we're not going to rehash all the drama from the past. We had a project that was a good project. It didn't pass. And so we have to look for other opportunity for the Byron Carlisle. But now we're looking at the Byron Carlisle. We haven't, by the way, the city hasn't completed the poll. I understand that they're working on that poll. And so once we get that independent poll back, we're going to know exactly what the community wants for the Byron Carlisle. And then we'll be able to better assess that. But I don't want to hold up the 72nd Street and hold it hostage for another project that's going to benefit a much smaller group of people. I think that we all want something to be done with the Byron Carlisle, and we'll certainly make it a priority. But in my view, it's not the priority, it's a priority. So I'm very much excited about looking for opportunities to close the gap of the $17.7 million on this project so we can move it forward. I think it's going to be transformative for North Beach, and I very much believe we need to move forward with it. I have some ideas on where we can find that money, and I can offer those when we have our next meeting. So I hope that we can get moving with the project. That's my goal. That's my dream.
Yeah, and I share your sentiments exactly right. I think we'll find solutions for the Byron Carlisle. Let's remind ourselves that we had a solution and we decided not to go that route. We've worked very hard to find the funding mechanisms to complete a project that voters overwhelmingly voted on. And I think it's very doable. Madam City Manager, I don't know if you have any views on our ability to come in, at or under budget, or the revised budget, but I have confidence that we will do that. Mayor, do you have anything to add on this?
Look, we have some city properties that we need to, that now seems to be a good time to unload, and we ought to do that to raise capital. I think, by the way, I think our disagreements on how to do that are going to be a game of inches, not a game of miles. I think we're all going to probably find that there's very simple ways to unload property in ways that are consistent with the community development. And frankly, there's a lot of money there, and now's a good time in the market to unload those properties. Everybody wants to come here. The property, real estate is pretty hot right now, so it does make sense. I think we're going to easily be able to generate some cash, and I think we just need to figure that out. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of disagreement about that. I think we'll have very small little nuances that we all are going to throw into the mix. But at the end of the day, when we monetize these properties, we're going to be able to have extra capital. But I think the 72nd Street project, I mean, the residents voted on it, was part of the GO bond. I know John feels very strongly that when we make that commitment to the public, we got to follow through. So we're going to follow through on that.
Mr. Chair, could I just add
one
more? Thank you, Mayor. So one of the things that the administration could look at, the CRA has now passed. With the Byron Carlisle, one of the things that, because I spent quite a bit of time trying to put that deal together, and I was looking at a bridge loan on the CRA, and I talked to several people about that. So one of the things that I would like the administration to look at before our next meeting is we've got about $18 million that we need to close. As the mayor mentioned, we've got some property that has high value, and we just moved that out of finance last week to move to the commission. We're going to raise X number of dollars there. But I would like the administration to look at the possibility, and legal as well, for this $18 million. What's a reasonable amount that we could budget for a bridge loan? Is it $5 million? Is it $10 million? Perhaps over a 10-year period, so that we could raise part of that $18 million with a bridge loan, and it may be, if legally we can do it, we may not need to take that loan today. We just may need to have the authorization to take it when we need the funds in 3 or 4 years. But I would like us to look at that as administration to see what's possible. I know for the Arts Center, for example, they did a very significant bridge loan, and so they found a way to do it there. And so I'd like the administration to come back and let us know what would be, is 10 years a reasonable time? Is that legal? Is $10 million a reasonable amount? In which case, we would be looking at raising $8 million, and we could, I think, easily do that with the sale of some of these properties. So please add that to your list to look at in your spare time, Alina.
We will.
Thank
Great.
You.
Just one thing. I think, Commissioner Richardson, you raised it with the passage of the CRA, you know, officially this week. Want to congratulate all of us, particularly you, Mr. Mayor. I know you worked extremely hard, Madam City Manager, all the staff. And then the real hero is Michelle Berger. I don't know if she's back there or not, but she worked tirelessly to help get the county commissioners comfortable with passing the CRA. So it's a big win for the whole city, particularly North Beach. So big milestone victory. Commissioner Gongora, you have your hand up.
Thank you. Yes, I'll start with what I fully agree with. I do think that the passing of the North Beach CRA will have a positive economic impact. So congratulations to the entire city and all involved. I understand we're going to have to tweak ours a little bit to comply with what the county passed, but I look forward to having that discussion next week. The Neighborhoods Committee 2 days ago touched a little bit on Byron Carlisle. We had an assessment report presented on what needed to be done to either rehab or build a new theater. And the projections were somewhere approximately between $15 and $20 million. And the Neighborhoods Committee did pass a sense of the committee for the four members that were there that the Byron Carlisle does need to be a priority. I don't know if it needs to be the priority, but it needs to be a priority. And different people in the city will have different ideas, actually, on which project would be more transformational for the area, which one that they like more. I don't like pitting projects against each other. I think we need to do the 72nd Street complex. The voters approved it. We approved it. It has gone way over and beyond what any of us on this body or even the voters could have envisioned, because the price tag we assigned to it is not the dollar amount we're looking at now. So we're going to have a serious, hard discussion on whether we can really do all of these extras or whether we need to pare it down to something perhaps a little bit more viable for us. And I do think that that conversation has to happen at the same time as the Byron Carlisle. You can't approve budgets in a vacuum. And these are both projects that warrant moving forward. We can't strangle the Byron Carlisle Theater to death, because what's going to happen is if we keep putting it in second place, then eventually it'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Years down the line, we'll say, oh, we should have taken that deal we had because nothing came forward. But at the same time, we've strangled it and put it in second, third, fourth, and fifth place. So I don't want to approve the 72nd Street complex without having a discussion at the same time about the Byron Carlisle funding. It's not a lot of money in comparison to 15 or 20 million when the other project is 100 million. Also, by waiting for the GO bond, it's too long. My understanding, and maybe John Woodruff can provide us more insight here, is that even once the GO bond gets going, it's going to take some time, and I think a couple of years, before it generates enough revenue that it's bondable and we can go out and potentially get a bond. And then that's another 2 years or 3 years that the Byron Carlisle stays empty. So for me, I want to hear them both together. And I would also like to hear, I guess, from John, how much time will there be before we can actually look to bond out the GO bond monies and use them for a project?
Yeah, as far as the 72nd Street goes, there is some money that was in tranche one, and the bulk of the construction dollars are in tranche two. I don't anticipate any real delay there because, let's say, the overall category of parks isn't spending the money as quickly as possible, and we can't really go get the next bond. What we would do is we would realign funding from other projects that aren't spending it in order to be able to spend it faster, so then we could get to the next bond. So I think there's a path forward on the GO bond side. That's not the area of concern on our side. It's more of the 17.7 million that is unfunded at this point.
Okay. I guess for me, I would like to have a holistic discussion on capital funding in North Beach and how we can fund both of these projects moving forward.
Okay. I see a hand up from the public, Wayne Roberts.
Thank you, Ricky. My remarks aren't going to be light on the commission, but let's be honest about the GO bond regarding that project in North Beach. The what I consider to be a garage that was called an aquatic center, now a community center, but 80% of the cost is a garage, one block from the beach. You know, I've lived in a lot of towns. I don't know how that works in planning, but I think if it was a standalone boat and there was less PAC money raised to promote the GO bond, and it was a separate vote, that would have been voted down, hands down, if there was a application opposing it. I've spoken to people in North Beach. They don't like the project, generally, where it is, how much money they're spending on it. So, you know, I don't agree that, you know, that the people, especially of that neighborhood, is in love with what exists there. Plus the 100 million, it's a shell. I don't think it includes filling out whatever community center aspects of the development is, you know, whether it's a library. I don't know what you're doing with moving the library there. I don't think it includes any of the expenses. So your 100 million is really way, way higher. And the only, you know, the GO bond said 60 million. So I don't know where you're getting 18, but it sounds like 40 million higher. Plus, thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Thank you. Member from the public. Good morning. I think put on your mic there. I'm not sure. Is that on?
Yeah.
It's on? Okay.
Good morning. John Bowes, resident of North Beach, Normandy Isles. I wanted to take a minute. I wasn't planning on speaking about this item, but it is very important to the residents of North Beach. And I would like to say, first and foremost, both these are important. People think there's absolutely a need for something like a theater at Barton Carlisle or an arts center. Very important. But the Aquatic Center, Civic Center, that's a very, to me, the most important project because it is transformative. It is voted in. People like both of them. So I hate to say one against the other because, to me, that doesn't make sense. From the folks that I've talked to, they're both important. But to link them together, in my opinion, isn't the right thing to do. It just can't bring down one in favor of the other. They're both important. We've got funding issues on one. How can we correct it? How can we either bring the cost down, find funding? And we've got an issue with the Byron that we need to try and figure out. So I would just ask that you're mindful in not pairing them together and bringing both of them down in spite of one or the other. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. John Woodruff, you want to come back up here? John, what do you need from us on this item?
I think we're good. It was just more talking about the plan of action in terms of coming back on the 30th with, you know, what would that look like if we kept moving forward? Because it's not normal, to not have all the dollars in hand. So it's something we want to make sure is eyes wide open, everyone understands it, and that we work at a committee so when it gets to commission, whether it's in September or October, that everybody's really clear about how that would work for going in that direction.
John, is it possible that before we have the next conversation, you and legal can look at the issue of whether or not we could structure a bridge loan?
You're talking about for the Byron Carlisle?
No, I'm talking about for the 72nd Street because that I think is important in terms of making a decision how we move forward there. If you say that you think it's possible to do a $10 million bridge loan that would be due in 10 or 12 years, then we're looking for $8 million. And I think it's clear that we're going to be able to raise that through some property sales. And so it becomes it's easier. You know, there are some people that feel like we should scale the project back. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to have a world-class facility that will really be transformative for the community. So I want to find this money. So is that something, Alina, that you all can do before we meet next, is look at the legality and the possibility of a bridge loan on the CRA?
I think we can certainly use the summer to continue to evaluate all of these options. I'm a little unclear as to what you're suggesting specifically and whether it relates to a bridge loan that's tied to the CRA funding or whether it's tied to the GOB. And so I do have a concern.
My understanding,
about
Commissioner, and the reason why I asked about the Byron Carlisle is for the Byron Carlisle, that might be an option. I'm pretty sure it's not an option. We can confirm for the 72nd Street project because that project's already budgeted in some form.
So we can't use you're saying you don't think we can use a bridge loan to do partial funding on a project. It has to be full funding.
If a project, Rafael, do you remember the exact language? Or?
Sorry, no. So if a project is already on your capital list and the 72nd Street project is, then you cannot use CRA funding unless that project comes off the list and then stays off the list for a minimum of 3 years. So
okay.
A bridge loan would be available against future CRA funds for a Byron project, which is not currently funded. But we could also look at bridge loans for this project with other available revenue sources. It doesn't have to be limited to the CRA.
Okay.
Right.
Perfect.
And I would just say that that's not what you would normally see, I guess. That's not traditional. It could be done. Almost anything can be done. So that's why we're trying to say, I guess, is that we need to spend plenty of time at committee talking about what this would look like from a contractual standpoint and from a fiscal standpoint, because it's going to be a stretch.
Yeah, I understand. Mm-hmm. So when we do that, also maybe be prepared to talk about the numbers, because I'm hearing different numbers from what I saw in the LTC, because a facility I saw in the LTC was $25 million plus, and plus that's a gray shell, plus build-out. So I think what we're talking about for Byron Carlisle could be $30 to $35 million. So if you could be prepared to discuss that as well, so that we're all talking about we're all talking on the same terms in terms of the dollar amount that it would take for that kind of facility.
So just to clarify, when this item comes back on July 30th, are we supposed to be ready to talk about the Byron Carlisle? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm happy to talk about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Listen, we need to first figure out, we have these assets that we can sell. That's the best pathway for all of us, because it's not a loan, it's not a instrument that may or may not be usable, and it potentially would be able to fund not simply these projects but others. So I think that's our best path right now, to focus on that. Now, that's already out of finance and coming to the commission.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's where we're going to be, because frankly that's a way to get cash, and the amounts are not of this order, they're higher than this order, depending upon what we decide to do. Obviously shouldn't do something that has a short-term problem, or a long-term problem for short-term gain, but I don't think we're going to – I think we have enough properties right now. We can solve this.
I think you're right, Mayor. We can do it. My concern with 72nd Street is, we've seen because of the pandemic and other issues that construction costs are going up. So I don't want to wait 15 months or a year or 2 years on 72nd Street, because – we could see that project escalate another 10%. So I very much want to find a way that we can move forward with this. So
in our estimation, might be less, actually, because remember that there's a spike in prices right now because of COVID. So it might actually be less. I'm just throwing that out there. The next slide, the last slide, really, in the presentation had to do with the revenue
Commissioner
sources.
Commissioner Samuelin was trying to interject here, just trying to get these folks to wrap up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a couple comments. The first thing is, we don't want to pit the projects against each other. We want to do both of them. They're fundamentally different. One hasn't started. One, we haven't signed contracts, and one is an asset we owned for 20 years and is approaching a status of being condemned. That's a different game. You got to fix what you got before you earn the right to do new things. The second thing is, I believe that we do have important opportunities to seek revenue. I think some of the ideas coming that the mayor mentioned have been discussed at finance are right on, and I think those are good opportunities. I do think we should look at a bridge loan from the CRA. When I talked about the CRA, I specifically have talked about using that funding for the Byron Carlisle. So I think a bridge loan exposure, if it doesn't work for 72nd Street, I think would be appropriate for Byron. We all want to get both done. All I'm asking, and I believe very consistent with what Commissioner Gongora said, is we just want to see them on the same piece of paper so that we could say, how much money do we need? What are the sources? That we don't put one ahead of the other and then wake up and say, gee, there's just no way of doing it. That is the bottom line. So I strongly would like to see both discussed next time we talk about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, I think on this we're going to have some disagreements. I'm much more in the camp on this with the mayor and Commissioner Richardson that, we all agree we want to see both projects, Byron Carlisle and the 72nd Street Aquatic Community Center, completed. But tying them both together, making it sort of an either-or or chicken or the egg situation, I think there's a division of opinion on that. that said, I think, John, we're asking you to give us some additional options with funding options that might help us resolve our areas of disagreement here. The mayor and Commissioner Richardson proffered, some questions around bridge loans. Last meeting, we had a lengthy discussion about where the estimates are going to come in on the library site. I'm not sure where we're at on that, but, to the extent that the library site is hopefully more valuable than we've at this point indicated, that might resolve some of the issues that we're debating here, which is where's the money going to come from. I happen to think that those are incredibly valuable parcels that the city owns that can generate possibly enough to fund both of these projects. All that said, with respect to the Byron Carlisle, one thing I'd like us to do is to get a real good cost estimate. You know, there's a lot of ways we can go about doing that, but you know, what is it we want to see at the Byron Carlisle? I mean, we can do a $10 million, $15 million project, or we could do a $30 million project. There's a whole gamut of things that we could do at the Byron Carlisle, so I think it's, even though we own the building, it's very premature. We don't know how much that's going to cost because we don't know what we want. I think we should go out to the community and survey our residents as well as the artistic community and see what data they provide us. And then we go out and start getting some architects to do some renderings for us so we can ballpark what this thing might actually cost. Because right now it's very theoretical, and so we're just throwing numbers around. The Aquatic Center is much further along in terms of scope, and we've already put this out to bid. We've got three top-tier bidders. We've already started to sharpen our pencils with the top bidder. So this thing, once we identify the funding, we can start moving forward on this. So this project's actually further along than the Byron Carlisle is.
Mr. Chair, let me, if I could, and I know you want to wrap this up as we should. With the Byron Carlisle, you know, after the other deal did not go through, I know a number of us had initiatives, and I said, let's do a poll. It's my understanding the city is working on that. Hopefully we'll have that back in September, and we're going to know what the community wants, because right now I think that there is a lot of differing opinions about what the community really wants there. But I would ask the administration to really think outside the box here. The last deal that had some housing involved was a private deal. It failed, and we won't rehash that. But think outside the box. There may be another way of structuring the Byron Carlisle to include workforce housing. You know, the amendment that we're going to have to clean up here at the commission that was passed at the county commission requires that 10% of the funding be used. So there may be a way to structure a deal with a bridge loan if it involves workforce housing. I find it remarkable that the deal in Collins Park on the housing had no opposition, but the Byron Carlisle had all this opposition. I will never understand that. So maybe go figure out what we did in Collins Park that everyone loved, and maybe just put the same thing up there but put a cultural center under it or something. So, and then maybe we won't have any controversy and we can find a way to pay for that. So, but really, I would just ask you all to think outside the box and think about whether or not, you know, we could combine it with workforce housing or something else, but structure the deal in such a way that it won't have so much opposition. So,
a great question that you asked about what the difference between the Byron Carlisle and the Collins Park garage, and I've made that comment many times. You've been in politics long enough, Commissioner Richardson, to understand that logic and critical reasoning don't apply.
Right.
Commissioner Gongora, your hand is up.
Thank you. And I've been in politics long enough to know that if we move forward with the North Beach Aquatic Center and we put the Byron Carlisle in second place and we delay it with polls, waiting for potential GO bond funding, we talk about what happened at Collins Park, that it's going to delay longer and longer and longer. And this is an area of difference, obviously, today on this body. I don't place the Aquatic Center over the Byron Carlisle. I think they're both important projects that we should figure out how to fund together at the same time and deliver. Because all of the arguments that are being made about the Byron Carlisle could be made in reverse. The voters voted for $60 million for the North Beach Aquatic Center. We now want to spend $100. We don't know that the voters want that. Perhaps we should be polling them to see if they want us to pare down the details of the Aquatic Center to make it match the budget that was approved in the GO bond. We're making a lot of presumptions, some of us on this body, that the Aquatic Center, of course the voters want to spend over $100 million. I believe that they should be heard together, that we should do a North Beach charrette for both of these items. If we're going to poll it, let's hear if the voters want to do all of these enhanced funding increases. we need to figure out how to get both done. I am a supporter of the Aquatic Center. I want to get it done. I want to make it as fabulous and wonderful and amazing as possible and deliver something good for the community. But I also know that the way that this is going, the Byron Carlisle is going to be left behind, and I'm not willing to do that. So I would like to see at next week's budget meeting how we can fund both. I would like to see funding for the Byron Carlisle fully explored so I can better understand how they're both going to get done, because I'm going to be less excited to move forward with the Aquatic Center if there's no talk or no plan for how Byron Carlisle is going to happen.
There's some members from the public. I see a hand. Joseph Magazine.
Yep. Thank you for your time, and I think it's a very good conversation here. If I could just make one respectful suggestion, and this is along the lines of Commissioner Richardson's latest comments, is, you know, before moving forward with entirely publicly funding, looking for public funding sources, I would just really maybe have a meeting of the minds and see if a P3 option is totally dead. I know that we had the previous iteration that you're discussing, but we're in a different world now. One of the largest oppositions to that was what the actual final product would look like. I know that there was a lot of concern that the final product would include short-term rental housing and things of that nature. But we're talking about some very, very large numbers here, you know, with the Byron car of between 15 and I think I heard upwards of possible 25 or $30 million. If you'd be able to work with the private sector to essentially deliver a product, you know, it's kind of a case of we can't always have our cake and eat it too. If there was that strong of demand for the Byron car, I think it would have raised revenue when it was in operation to at least fund its maintenance. So I would just, I'm not saying that it is the option going forward, but with numbers this consequential, when you're looking to raise just $20 or $30 million in various places, some of that stuff can have an impact on the quality of life. You know, you have to sell more beach chairs on the beach or advertising on the side of buses and things like that. So I would just really have circle back up one more time and see if that P3 option is totally dead, or given the new world that we're in, if there would be some way where we could essentially leverage the private sector to raise some of these funds. Thank you for your time and entertaining my comments.
Thanks. Okay. Colleagues, we've belabored this point.
Yes, we have.
John, do you have what you need?
I believe so. I guess my input would be that a big part of this equation is the revenue sources that we're talking about. So if I could just get that slide up, slide 20, where we talk about the library site, the vacant parcels, the Barclay. In other words, we need to get an RFP out. We got direction to do that. That's great. As soon as, but until we get those results, I think we're not going to get really far here in terms of how to actually make this happen. Because things like a bridge loan from the CRA should be kind of like a last resort. You shouldn't start with that. You should start with, okay, what else do we have here to work with? And then, okay, we need to close this gap and we can get there. So I think what we need to do is do a lot of planning so that we're ready as soon as these RFPs come back and we have enough information to make the decisions that we need to. Then we have kind of a menu that we can go to and say, okay, if we need $10 million, here's how we would do it. If we need $5 million or if we need whatever, so that we can try to make both of those projects happen. I think that's kind of what I'm hearing.
And when are we getting the RFP?
Well, we haven't put them out yet, so they would go out in September. So okay, that's why.
Have we seen what they look like?
Mayor, we passed it in finance last week, and we're sending that to the commission to ratify, to authorize the city to put the RFPs out.
So the sooner that happens, probably the better in terms of.
Well, I think we're going to do that Wednesday, right? We're going to bring those to the approval to the commission on Wednesday to give you the authorization, the administration, to do the RFPs.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they're ready for the 28th. I think we just talked about them last Friday, so I don't think that time was sufficient to get it on the agenda. But
well, I mean, the thing is, when's our next meeting after?
September 17th.
Yeah, so if there's any way we can get at least one of them, it would be helpful, especially the big one, because that would give us, I'd rather not wait a couple months for people to start mulling over whether they want to invest.
Chairman, we, as you recall, we in finance made a recommendation to send it to the commission to do an RFP on the four properties and the Barclay and to send that to the commission, to the full commission. So, Mayor, you could add a late file item. We could add that for this, for Wednesday.
Yeah, you know,
Give the city the authorization to issue those RFPs. We have already made a recommendation on the structure of the RFP.
So, John, do we need to approve a final RFP for it to go out, or can we just tell you?
We may be putting him on the spot if I can weigh in
on that as well,
yeah, please.
Mr. Chair. So generally, we do finalize the RFPs and bring them to the commission prior to issuance. On occasion, you have given direction to issue the RFP with the broad parameters, with the RFP to be released to you by LTC as soon as it's ready. This has come up before. This is how we've done it.
So let me just say this. I'm sorry. My mic's on. I'm just leaning back. I don't think we need to micromanage the RFP in a sense that I think there's a lot of ways that this can be done. I know a lot. I mean, frankly, if we got an unsolicited bid, that would be fine, too, on that, because I think that qualifies as well. But I would like us to put something general out there to see what the market comes back with. We obviously wanted to integrate a lot of the green in the area and things like that, because there's a lot of parks and north and south of it and some work that's being done on that street. But I'd like to get something. I'd like to at least light the fuse on Wednesday. So, John, if it's easier for us to say to you on Wednesday, do something general, a general RFP that gets as much as possible, then I would be prepared personally to put it on the agenda and support it myself. I don't know what my colleagues would do, but I guess my point is if it's easier for you to do something like that rather than come in with an agent, I see you come up because it's a little bit in your portfolio, we would be happy to send out something general with the idea that the marketplace would respond. I'd rather not wait 2 months, frankly, because the market's good right now, and we've been in a lot of our discussions about bridge loans and is frankly gymnastics that we don't need if we do actually have cash coming in for this the sale of an asset. Adrian, you got a comment here?
Mayor, if I may, good morning. So part of this for these land deals, there's obviously the RFP process which we're discussing right now, but I'd like to also make the comment that the city does have a contract with CBRE for brokerage services that does allow for us to have them represent us in land sales and stuff like that. So what we've done is we've had conversations with CBRE and their vacant land sales team. They could put out whatever requirements we decide, put it out and get feedback from the market and give us the offers of interested parties. So those are things that we're discussing right now with the Office of Real Estate. And Alex, Dennis.
Mr. Chairman, I agree, and I agree, Mayor, with your sentiment on this. I think we should put an item. You can approve it for late file. The Finance Committee already identified the four properties and the Barclay and gave some parameters. So let's get an item. Let's just give you the authorization. We don't need to micromanage this and allow you to go out while we're away and look to the market, because I don't want to delay this 2 months.
And by the way, and I sort of feel like if when we micromanage these RFPs, we end up shooting ourselves a little bit. Obviously, because we envision what we want, and the market sort of as a whole, the invisible hand of the market, as they say, has its own view on how to do things. So I don't mind a general RFP. Madam Manager, are you okay with that?
I am. I come from a world where that delegated authority lies with the manager, and so I'm perfectly comfortable with that. I just don't want to create unrealistic expectations. RFPs should be done accurately, correctly, and legally, and so that takes time. And so everything we're discussing here has not begun to be drafted. And so, again, I want to be very realistic and very honest about what we can and cannot do through the month of August. I see Alex standing in the corner there. I'd like to understand, because, again, I wasn't expecting this detailed discussion about the status of the RFP. Where are we on these RFPs as of today?
So,
this has not reached my office yet, but honestly, I think we need some direction because I keep hearing we're going to hire a broker and we're going to do an RFP. I think we need to clarify what is it that we're doing. Because if we're hiring a broker, you don't need an RFP.
And if I may, when you hire a broker, you know, it's just a straight sale, a simple, you know, property, not a development proposal. What I think what you're looking for with the various options for the 75th Street property, it's really more development proposals. You care about what's gonna end up there, as opposed to here's a surplus lot and we're just gonna sell it for a residential development, right? So I think that you could do a listing with a broker, but the 75th Street property probably lends itself to an RFP.
And I guess the point is this, that I think that's absolutely accurate. I don't think we want to just sell it. First of all, we don't know what the property's entitlements are at this point. Maybe we do, but maybe we want to reconsider them because that will have an impact both on value and how it fits into the neighborhood. We may want to agree that height, but, you know, floor plate, I mean, there are lots of things we could think about, how the front of that, those five parcels integrate with the beach walk and the parks and things like that. I mean, there are those issues. I actually would love to see what the marketplace would bring back to us because somebody's going to come in with some very good ideas and someone's going to come in with some very bad ideas. But I don't know what we need to give you other than this general guidance that you can go forward because I think we're looking to do it. And I don't want to wait another 2 months because I'd hate for us to start this process in 2 months and then 3 months later, you know, finish it and then it goes out to market and all of a sudden we're in a different climate in terms of real estate. So, and plus, I think we're all very anxious to use those proceeds as soon as we can get them because they're not going to come, obviously, immediately. They're going to come, especially if there's a development agreement, when we go through all sorts of readings and things like that. So we're far away to begin with, and I'd rather not lose 2 months. Can we, at the next, at our commission meeting, Raul, can we, do we have to approve the RFP, or can we give general guidelines to explain?
You could authorize the issuance of the RFP and delegate to the manager to finalize it and release it to you by LTC. And you can also, for the other properties, if Adrian recommends using a broker, it may be more appropriate for those properties, authorize the manager to list the properties with the broker.
So, Madam Manager, I don't want to create unrealistic expectations in you. One of your favorite expressions.
I think that that summary provided by Raphael is perfect.
Okay. All right. So why don't we just plan on doing that on Wednesday? And you guys need to do, you need to prepare for that action on Wednesday. I'm assuming we'll consider it publicly then. And if you guys have thoughts, you should let the manager know before Wednesday.
So I thank you, Chairman and Mayor. I think the 72nd project we would probably want to do an RFP on because we want to see what the world has to offer. The Barclay, we probably want to do an RFP on that as well rather than just a sale, just because there is some interest on how that property would be used. The Finance Committee has recommended that any proceeds be used for low-cost or workforce housing, which, by the way, is if we were to use that money, then that could be part of some sort of other deal on the Byron Carlisle if it involved workforce housing as well. So with the other properties that we are bringing, I think there's no reason why we couldn't just use a broker on those. So that would be
The one on 87th and the one on 63rd and Pine Tree. I will say that on the record that the one on 63rd and Pine Tree is on the water, so we would have to go through that same process as some of the other ones that are waterfront.
Right.
But we will present it that way.
Exactly. All right, so you guys be ready on Wednesday, and you guys be ready, members, and let the manager know if you have some specific ambitions so she can at least consider them. But we're going to give you, you know, manager authority to go be a manager on this.
I'm ready. I'm on it.
The wheels of government.
I add something?
The Empire State Building was built in 13 months. The Hoover Dam. I mean, it's not funny. You know, it's sad. It's it's sad that, you know, it's not just us, it's the entire government structure. It doesn't make us better to be this inefficient. We're just asking for an RFP to sell land, which is something that happens in Dade County all the time. There's a member of the public who has his hand up, Manning Salazar.
Sorry. I would like to speak when he's done.
I am sorry, Commissioner Gongori. Go first, and then Mr. Salazar.
Okay. I understand the need for moving quickly, but what we're doing here is kind of unprecedented. I've served on a lot of commissions. The selling of public land with brokers to raise money is a very unusual thing, something that might happen only once during your entire tenure of terms as commissioners or mayors. Doing these types of things is unusual. So I would like to understand what I'm doing better. I don't want everybody to think, based upon the comments that were made earlier, that all of us, at least not me, fully support giving the manager the discretion to go out and put an RFP. I've never done that before. I don't know if I feel comfortable with it without a briefing. I don't have the same ability as you all do, serving on the Finance Committee and having the briefings that you've had and attending the meetings and fully understanding what these properties are and the terms of their sale. But when I hear selling of public lands, it makes my antennas go up. It's something I want to look into further. I want to be briefed by the city manager and the city attorney. Also, I'd like to better understand this process of just giving the manager authority to do an RFP without it being in the agenda and without us ever having reviewed it. It's a highly unusual thing to be added as a supplemental item at a late stage. I'm not saying that I wouldn't support it, but I would need to have a much better understanding of what we're doing before I would support this.
Okay. Manning Salazar?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak. This is Manning Salazar. I am a member of the Committee to Save the Byron Carlisle Neighborhood Association to Save North Beach. I'm also on the CRA Advisory Committee. And I'd like to advocate for that the commission does whatever is necessary to finally do what the community has been asking for and activate the Byron Carlisle to its fullest potential. This is an extremely important project and asset for our community. It has not been activated and functioning for decades. And we have been missing out on all of the economic activity and growth and quality of life that it can contribute to our neighborhood. I believe that if there's the political will, we can find the funds to do so. When considering the three different options, I believe it's between 15 to 22 million. We should take into consideration that even with the RFP and the private ownership, the build-out was going to cost over $10 million. So it's, in comparison to that, it's not so much money. And when you look at what it's going to give back to the community, I think there's an estimate that the Colony on Lincoln Road brings in over $10 million per year. This is an investment that will pay back itself very quickly. I think that when considering this and the garage on 72nd Street, we need to remember that the voters approved a project that was for $53 million, not $100 million. And unfortunately, that project is sucking out many of the assets and funds that we have for projects like the Byron. And I think it's important for the city to take care of assets that it has already before moving on and building new things, new assets. I would remind the commission that it voted 5-7 to keep the Byron Carlisle in public hands and to invest in it. And so I would ask that it follow through on its decision and find the funds, which I believe are there if there's the political will. Please, the committee is asking for you to support the Byron Carlisle and finally give us the theater and cultural center that we have been asking for. Thank you.
All righty. So where are we? Are you
That's great.
More confused?
No. That's what we needed, because there's a lot of moving parts, and to synchronize them and try to optimize the timing is really important, as you can tell. And we're going to do the best we can. So thank you for all that input. I think at this point it's safe to wrap up the budget item, unless there's anything else that any member of the commission would like to bring up at this point? Because we just have five more small items, like the Normandy Shores budget and millage, that we need to discuss that could have a budget implication. So I just would invite you guys, the non-committee members, to stay just for a little bit longer. I don't think it'll take too long to get through these items. I did hear from Chair, from Commissioner Steinberg, that she would love it if you were able to accommodate item number three next, if possible, just because she has a timing commitment.
Commissioner Steinberg, are you on? I see.
Hi. Sorry, I just ran back.
Okay. Take your time if we need to get settled. So we're concluding, John, we've now concluded item number one, which is the update on the operating and capital budget, and we'll start the rest of the meeting now. Okay. Commissioner Steinberg, you've asked us to take your item, which is the stop the bleed item, which is item number three. Would you like to tee this up?
Thank you so much. I appreciate you front-loading my item because I do have to run. But as you know, I added the item to the commission as a referral to implement and find funding for the kits in the city of Miami Beach and hopefully our feeder pattern schools. The kits paired with training sessions will provide the school staff with the necessary skills and equipment needed to stop bleeding from, God forbid, a traumatic injury after a school shooting or accident, which unfortunately is a more common occurrence than we would like to have. Kit training will be provided for free by Jackson Health Rider Trauma Center, and Miami-Dade County Public Schools will be providing blood pathogen training. So we wouldn't have to worry about any of that. But the Stop the Bleed kits themselves, which have been recently implemented at Beach High, as you know, would, I think, be very important for us to do. The cost per kit is $62.50. And the wall mount, which unfortunately Miami-Dade County Public Schools is requiring a specific wall mount, is $45. So while the hope is to never, ever have to use these kits, I really urge us to do the right thing here and help our schools become safer for our children. And I have Leslie Rosenfeld, and I know there's a resident who wants to speak as well.
Okay. Anybody else want to talk about this?
The funding request is $15,000, is
it? I believe so, right? $15,000? John, are you going to brief us on this stuff?
Yeah, I think Leslie was going to try to jump on, but the memo mentions...
I'm here. Yes. Huh?
Okay.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
So actually, thank you, and good morning, everyone. The PTA at Miami Beach Senior High School, with several of their partners, has successfully implemented and funded the installation of approximately 140 kits at Miami Beach Senior High School. To provide the kits and the installation equipment at the other Miami Beach feeder schools, inclusive of Treasure Island, would require 349 kits. The estimated cost for each kit and the installation wall mount is about $107, and that does not include shipping. So actually, if we were to move forward with this item and provide kits and wall mounts at each of the schools, inclusive of Treasure Island, we're looking at about $37,500, and that does not include shipping.
Okay.
So can someone explain, I'm looking at the first page of item three in 21, I'm looking at 15,000, but now, Leslie mentioned 30-something thousand, so I'm just unsure about the difference.
Right. That Commissioner, that $15,000 amount was what it cost to install 137 kits and wall mounts solely at Miami Beach Senior High School. And that expenditure make our school safe foundation and Dr. Karp's contribution at the time. So it was $15,000 for 137 kits that were already installed at Miami Beach Senior High School. We're looking for the installation at the other five schools within our city limits, as well as Treasure Island, which would yield the need for 349 kits at a cost of approximately $107 each, excluding shipping.
So then what's the total cost of that?
Sounds like they're looking for $37,518. Is that right, John?
Yeah, plus shipping. So I guess we'll get an estimate on what the shipping is. It looks like this is a one-time request, right, Leslie? One-time cost?
It would be a one-time cost.
Mm-hmm. Is there a recommendation from the administration?
Because it's one time, I feel comfortable recommending it.
I mean, one of the questions I have is, why isn't the school district doing this if they believe this to be worthwhile? I mean, we pay a ton of money into our school district. It seems like this is equipment that they should be providing. And where do we want
to
draw?
They should, but I think they've become accustomed to Miami Beach.
Well, that's the issue, are we starting bad behavior at the school district where they just start sort of saying no to discretionary items that, some of us believe should be a priority, knowing that we'll probably, step in and fund the gap. I mean, I'm supportive of this, but it is more of a philosophical issue of, like, where do we start drawing the line?
Right.
Well, can I weigh in? Listen, it's a great point, but Commissioner Richardson, you were in the legislature, as was I. The funding that comes out of Tallahassee for schools sucks, to use a term of art. And our city, I think, has rightfully made the choice to say our residents care deeply about schools, and even though they are not the responsibility of the city, we are going to make sure that our schools for our kids, are better. And with these kinds of, they're safer, and they have, whether it's a STEAM program, a mental health program, some of the other things we've done, the capital improvements, we're spending a ton in our schools. But frankly, I think our residents are sort of happy we are, and we can't play chicken with the state on school funding because we will lose, because I can tell you they don't care. So don't play chicken with them. Just do what we can. Now, by the way, if this is being funded elsewhere, it ought to be funded here too. But this is exactly what happened with school police. Right after Parkland, we were waiting a year or two for them to get their act together, and we acted within like 2 weeks. I think our residents were happy we did. So the reality is schools are not going to be funded at the level we'd like them to be. They may never have been. So we can either say we object and do nothing, or we can bite the bullet and fund things that we think are important. So if we think this is important, we ought to fund it.
Well, to your point, Mayor, it's the question is whether or not this is being funded in other parts of our county and not in Miami Beach. So
I don't know.
If it is, then I'm not willing to pay up because they should be supporting our community. Mm-hmm. But if they're not, and this would be something that would enhance our schools, then I'm supportive.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I agree with that too. If this is happening elsewhere in the county that the schools district is funding that, then I'd be less supportive of this just for the reasons I stated before.
Mr. Chair, I think we're of like minds. I support the program. I support educational enhancements because education is good for the community at large. I would actually, one, of course, like to understand if the school board funds it elsewhere, but my recommendation would be let's fully fund it, but I would like to make an ask of the school board. Let's ask for half the funding. And let's start to set the principle with some of these enhancements that we would like to be partners and we're willing to step up. If the answer is no, so be it. We can make that call. But we owe it to our community to at least make the ask. But I will support full funding today pending the information on whether they do it elsewhere and an ask of the school board.
If that's a motion, I'll second it.
That was a motion?
Yeah, if I may, there is someone who has their hand up who would like to speak on this.
Yeah, and then Commissioner Gongora, he has his hand up. Commissioner?
Yeah, no, good. I was happy to hear the questions. Some good points were raised. I support this funding, but I think that Richardson's question is a good one. Are we paying for it while the school board's doing it in other parts of the county? Because that I would not like to hear. Assuming that they are not, I think we need to do this. We've always contributed more to our schools. That's part of the reason why a lot of young families choose to live here, because we do have such wonderful public schools in our city. It enhances our city. And it's a reasonable request for a one-time budgetary expenditure. So I support it, but I'd like to make sure that the county is not paying for it elsewhere besides our city.
Okay. Member of the public, Amy, you have your hand up.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, okay, great. Hi, everyone. My name is Amy Hershkowitz, and I am the one who put the project together at Miami Beach Senior High for the 137 Stop the Bleed kits, and I can decidedly answer your question about the county, about the school board funding this anywhere else. They are not. They actually didn't fund this either. What happened was the Miami Beach Senior High PTA gave me the yearly budget to do any project that I saw fit. And I chose this project because of the death of Alyssa Aladef at the Parkland shooting. A Stop the Bleed kit in her classroom may have very well saved her life. And so I took the budget from the Miami Beach Senior High PTA. I went to Miami Make Our Schools Safe, which is a nonprofit started and run by the mother of Alyssa Aladef, the girl I just spoke about. And she herself is a Broward County School Board official, but that has absolutely nothing to do with what Make Our Schools Safe does. And then I went to Martin Karp personally and asked him to fund the remaining amount that was left to do the kits after I came together with Dade County Public Schools, who generously created a program to support this safety enhancement. So they are paying for blood pathogen training. They are paying for inoculations for teachers. I myself, along with Michael Grieco, someone we all know very well, obtained a doctor from Jackson Health Rider Trauma Center who has agreed to train all of our feeder pattern schools, teachers, and staff for free. So this really is a community effort. And as far as the money being given to Beach High and enhancements of our schools, I can't thank all of you enough for all the police. You all know that I am a huge advocate of Jimmy Gotsis. But let me just say this, and I mean, I'm glad you're all funding this, and I want it to remain regardless of what research you do to find out about what the school board has or hasn't done, because I encourage you to do your due diligence. However, now that I'm no longer a member of the Miami Beach Senior High PTSA, I will say that they came to the city and asked them for a huge amount of money, almost double what we're asking for now, to do a landscaping enhancement to the courtyard at Miami Beach Senior High. And they were granted that money. And it was almost double what we're asking for now.
We're running out of time on this issue. It's going to pass. Okay. All right, folks.
Okay. So yep. We'll add an enhancement for...
I would just quickly add that for instance, Treasure Island, my recommendation would be that we partner with them, since many of our residents attend that school, and maybe split the cost 50-50, something that we could have Leslie as part of the motion be directed to go to Treasure Island to ensure that they can partner with us as well. So none of our residents are in a school that doesn't have the Stop the Bleed kits.
I'll defer to Leslie, but I believe the cost that was cited earlier includes Treasure Island at 100%.
Yes, the cost that was included in the 37, excluding shipping, does include Treasure Island at 100%. So if we were to go to North Bay Village to split the cost, it would be $4,000 in total for that school, so $2,000 each plus shipping.
Okay, so we'll add a one-time enhancement for this program. We'll ask the school board to split it 50% if possible, and if there's some amount to discount this from the Treasure Island piece, we'll look at that as well. Okay?
Okay. Commissioner Miner is going to be with us only for a brief while, so he asked that we hear item number 6, an item that he and I are co-sponsoring, and that's to discuss creating a position for single-family homes in the permitting process to have an ombudsman appointed. Commissioner Miner, if you're on, if you want to tee this up, I can do it.
Can I briefly interrupt? I apologize. I have to zoom into a 10:30 meeting, so I'm lagging out. But thank you all, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Have a great day. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Commissioner
Miner? I'm happy to discuss, Chair, but if you want to tee it up, whatever you prefer.
Yeah, so I'll tell you why I wanted to discuss this and then how I feel about it, and I know staff has something they want to say. I'm sure like all of us, we get complaints, comments, whatever you want to call it, from folks in our community, particularly the single-family home community, of how long and cumbersome the permitting process is. And I'd like to streamline that for our residents, particularly the single-family home folks. And so I thought if we were to have a point person for our community to go to rather than having to go to one of seven elected commissioners, that might streamline the process. That said, I'm not going to advocate to hire a full-time salaried person to be that person. I'd like to ask our administration of how can we streamline our permitting process, whether it's having a point person or a better process. But this is a real critical concern of many residents in our community. It's a problem that's existed for a really long time. It doesn't seem to be getting better. So, you know, my thought was if we had a point person for them to call who could shepherd them through the permitting process, that might be a way of streamlining things and making their lives easier. So this was a discussion item. I'm not advocating for a full-time salaried person to do this for us. Commissioner Miner, do you want to add anything to this?
Yeah, thank you. I was actually very pleased when you brought this item, which is why I co-sponsored, and I think I'm not going to repeat too much of what you said, but I agree. Obviously, we hear a lot about public safety, but this is probably second on the list of complaints that I receive. We all do, and you know, it gets frustrating for residents. They're trying to navigate the process and getting responses, and it's really something, like you say, it's been around for a while, but we need to improve it. Two points I want to make. I actually put a separate referral item because I learned last week that Governor DeSantis signed a new law that's going to kick in October 1st. That's actually require municipalities to respond to permit applications with strict deadlines, and we're going to have to reduce fees if we don't meet those deadlines, which is actually an interesting point. One, we'll have to comply with that law because it applies to us, but two, whether we should create our own timelines and deadlines that we need to meet and then suffer the consequences, whether it be lowering fees and what have you, if we don't meet those deadlines in a timely manner. The other point I want to make is I guess, Commissioner Arriola, you had a separate item that I liked as well, that you had asked the Inspector General to look into, not an investigation, but to look into best practices, how we can improve this. And I haven't heard anything, so I'd like to see if staff is ready to give an update on that. But also who the ombudsman reports to, and whether they're going to be reporting to internally or whether they're going to have some reporting responsibilities to the Inspector General and maybe in coordination with these best practices. Those are the kind of the issues I'm thinking about.
Great. Thank you. Would you like to help
us? Hi. Good morning, Commissioners. Natasha Diaz, Assistant Director. Natasha Diaz, Assistant Director. Good morning. What we wanted to comment on this is a lot of processes and procedures have changed over the last year and a half. As you know, we went completely online during the pandemic, and we've been working through process improvements throughout, including with the OIG office, who is in the process of performing an audit of the building department's processes and customer service. So we're still working that out. And so what we did do immediately to help address your concerns of the homeowners is we have beefed up our building customer service center, and we've created a dedicated channel for homeowners, including a dedicated email, homeownerbuild@miamibeachfl.gov, so homeowners can connect directly with our customer service manager, Leonor Hernandez. And so we continue to improve, and our recommendation is that we allow these changes and processes to kind of play out for an additional 6 months, and then reevaluate adding a new position for this. Any questions?
Chair, I have a question, so thank you.
Please.
Thank you. So you said you have an email that somebody can contact. What if they wanted to call? Is there a dedicated phone number?
We do. Well, we have our building customer call center. Customers can call the main line, the building department main line, press zero, and get connected to one of our 8 representatives. And if they are a homeowner, they get connected directly with the customer service manager, who will guide them all through the process. We've also created an appointment system where homeowners can select that they are a homeowner, and they will also be able to schedule an appointment to meet with us directly, where we will also guide them through the process.
Is it possible, Madam Manager, that maybe we could designate, instead of having one of 8 people, one person have a dedicated phone number, so that when we get those calls in our office, we can say, here's the email, here's the direct phone number, and this is the person who is going to respond to you. That way we have accountability, because with 8 people, then it's like, well, I thought somebody else was going to take care of it. And I think it would be better if we have a dedicated person. If it's possible. Now, you may say it's not workable.
No, I think that's what Natasha was saying, that we actually have. So I think, again, this is not an area that I've focused on in my 3 months, but I certainly am happy to. I'm spending a lot of time with our building official almost on a daily basis, and I'd be happy to follow up and discuss that further. But I think what they're saying is there have been all these improvements that have been done. There's been this technology process that's been added, which will hopefully help to expedite. There is a call center. There is a dedicated email address specifically. And I'll just need to verify. Is there a dedicated person as well, Natasha?
Yes, so Leonor Hernandez, which is our customer service manager, she's a longtime community liaison. She's very familiar with our residents. She is our dedicated person for
that. But can we get a direct dial? Because you're saying they called into the general number, and then somebody answers the phone, and then they have to, I guess, send it to her. So why can't we just have a dedicated number?
That's fine. We can certainly look at that.
And that way, mm-hmm. when we get the calls in our office, we can just say, here's the number. Call this person. And if you're not able to get it resolved, then call us back, that sort of thing. So. Yeah.
We can certainly look at that. I do want to comment on Commissioner Miner's comments regarding the state legislation. We're actually going to regroup on that next week. I just became aware of that legislation this week, and I do have a concern, and I certainly, again, don't want to create any false expectation. I don't know what the parameters of the law affect our timeline, and there's a possibility with the building department is a proprietary department, and it's fee-based. And so to the extent that those deadlines are not manageable within our current staffing pattern, that is something that we're going to have to revisit, and perhaps even the permit fee structure. But we can't have deadlines imposed on us artificially with no respect for what our process requires to meet those deadlines. So I don't want to be in a situation where we're having to refund permit fees because we can't meet the deadline because we're not properly staffed to meet deadlines that nobody discussed with us. So I need to review what the implications of that law are to our building department.
And to that point, Madam Manager, if you find that there are things in the new law that are just not workable in a dense urban environment, then we should be talking to our state rep and our state senator to see whether or not the law should be, at least we could propose changes for the coming legislative year.
Thank you, Commissioner. And shame on me, because I was not aware of that legislation making its way through the process. So we have to do a better job of monitoring that type of legislation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is obviously an important issue and concern to our residents. One thing I heard that I liked, and I recall the discussion with our OIG, and that they're looking at the process. I always like to sort of see the whole process holistically. Maybe this is one area to help. Maybe there are others. So when are we going to get that work? Do we have a date as to when we're going to be able to review and hear from the OIG about their best practices, process improvement?
No, I'm sorry. I don't have a date of when they will be completed with that, but they have been actively participating in our process mapping and whatnot, but we can find a date on that.
If we could, as an action, I would love just
to... Yeah, certainly. I don't think
ask the IG
can speak,
when we can hear from them, because I think that would inform the conversation.
It's been a while. I think it's been at least 6 months since I made that request. So
certainly. I don't know.
Commissioner Miner, your hand is up.
Yeah, no, thank you, and thank you for the report. I guess what I'm hearing from residents, and maybe it is
taking some time to implement. There have been some changes, which is great, but I guess I'm not hearing that from the residents who reach out to me. And it's very interesting because it's sometimes it's not people I'm that familiar with, but it's usually people I know. And that's why they're reaching out to me as opposed to another commissioner. And they're very frustrated. It's hard to describe, and it's consistent. So something's off. Because they feel like they're not getting responded to, they feel like they're not being helped, and I'm hearing it pretty consistently. So I think maybe the number you're describing, maybe they're not familiar. Maybe we have to market that better. I don't know if that's the issue, but and I guess there's also the issue, and this gets into a long discussion, and maybe there are reasons for it. But you know, there are different inspectors who go out, and they're not always familiar with the issues, and. Then there's departments that are waiting for other departments to respond, so there's build up in time. So it gets overlapped by 2 weeks upon 2 weeks instead of just having everybody submit within 2 or 3 weeks. Just a number of issues, and I think we all recognize that that we're not getting it done as quickly as possible. But what I'm hearing is not even not issuing the permits timely. I'm hearing a level of frustration that they're not being responded to. And that's where I think Commissioner Arriola brought this item that I'm co-sponsoring, is to have someone to intervene on their behalf, because they're getting to the point where they're coming to us. And it's become a little time consuming for my office. I don't mind doing it, but I don't think it's the best way to go about it.
So, yeah, thank you for your passion on this issue, Commissioner Minor. I share that passion and at times frustration. Not just this, but you know, many aspects of what we do as a city. Look, I mean, with respect to single-family homes, you know, this for most people, it's their most significant financial investment. So obviously, a huge deal. It's where they live. It's where they raise their family. So it's of premium importance to people, like their homes. And if they're trying to make improvements or make it safer, whatever, it's a big deal. They are the bedrock of our community. There are residents. There are voters, and we are in the customer service business of responding to them, and to the extent that we're not good at that, we hear it as commissioners, we're their elected officials, we have to respond. So I will tell you how I feel about this. I think Commissioner Minor shares that with me, is we're looking for improvements here. So if you want 6 months to get better, great. There's got to be accountability. If we come back here in 6 months and we're still hearing this crap, I mean, you know, something's got to happen. People got to lose their jobs. There's got to be changes in processes, because this is we're not making this up. This is a real problem for our community, and it's nice to have a hotline to have somebody answer the phone and say, okay, got it, but then not to resolve it. That's not customer service. Customer service is actually fixing the problem and making it go away and streamlining. Commissioner Minor and I are not making this up. This is from our residents.
Well, Commissioner, what I would ask then, if this is such a serious issue that I'm not aware of, because quite frankly, in 3 months, this has not come up to me at all, and I talk to all of you pretty frequently, I'd ask then, can you give us to September? The building department, again, is a proprietary fund. It does have funding available. If this is such a significant issue, I'd like the opportunity to discuss it and perhaps recommend a position in September, because it sounds like both of you have examples that I'm not aware of, and I'd like to understand it a little bit better. And again, now we have this other additional requirement that's based on a law that just passed, and we have to do some analysis there. I think that at the end of the day, the bigger issue in the future as a result of the tragedy that we've all witnessed is, you know, we're going to have issues with condo associations and residents. And there's going to be a lot of questions generated and a lot of issues between private residents and private condo associations that the city is going to end up in the middle of, quite frankly, not in a realistic way. The city is not in that relationship, but I think as a result of many of the decisions and the actions that the building department will be forced to take as part of this very comprehensive review of the 40-year recertification process, there are going to be a lot of issues for our residents and homeowners, because condo owners are homeowners, that are going to become a big issue between them and condos. So I think there may be a need between both single-family residents and condo owners, and perhaps we should address that in September.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Manager, I agree with you. I think it would be good to talk more about it. The issue of the single-family home permitting, I would describe that as a sort of systematic issue. I've been here 4 years. It's something we hear frequently. So it is an issue, and I appreciate my colleagues bringing it forward. But I think what you said about these condos and the questions that are going to come up, that seems like a really important issue. In fact, if we look at Wednesday's agenda, there's three or four of us who have items related to that. I believe it was Commissioner Steinberg raised the question, do we need to set aside some money or funding to make sure? So I think you're right on that we should look. And for me, that second need, based on the tragedy in Surfside, may even be more urgent.
And I've been cautious about that because from a regulatory perspective, that falls within the state regulatory process, and we do have a condo ombudsman that comes to City Hall on a regular basis. And so I've wanted to keep the lines very clean in terms of responsibility and not create any confusion. But given the issues being discussed today, I think I need some time to sort of revisit what the both needs are. And I encourage all of you, if you have specific examples of residents that are frustrated and have issues, please forward them to me, and I will take care of that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just, Madam Manager, before you arrived, just when I got sworn in November of 19, in my opening remarks, I put on the record that the number one complaint that I got from people when I knocked on hundreds of doors in my campaign cycle was the building department and getting a permit and process. So it is a very real issue. I appreciate your willingness to look at it, and maybe you're going to come back in September and say we do need to do it a different way. So certainly willing to give a little bit more time if it's 6 months, but I would not want to wait 6 months if you could look at at least a dedicated phone line. But come back in September. But it's a real issue.
Commissioner Miner, is your hand still up?
Yeah, just one last quick point. I'll actually add, I consider this a public safety issue as well, because often what I hear from residents who call me when they're frustrated, they're like, you know, next time I'm not even going to go through this process. And hopefully it's just a frustration and off-the-cuff remark. But I think there's a level of truth to that there could be people who know the process is so difficult that are not going to get that permit, which then creates a safety issue, because then we're not checking whether the whatever work is done is done properly. So I'll add that on top of the list of reasons why we need to improve this area.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, I see Mr. Bose in the audience, so why don't we take item number two? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Item number two is a discussion regarding the city's contribution to the Normandy Shores Local Government Neighborhood Improvement District's annual budget. And okay. Commissioner Richardson, you're the sponsor, it looks like.
Thank you. So I'll just quickly tee it up. So we've had a number of little issues related to the taxing district. One was we had to clean up something from last year. That's been done. We did that earlier. And then we're looking at the supplement that has previously been paid that was brought to our attention. So I recommended a week ago that we offer to pay for half of the Rover. I do not believe, by the way, that this is a supplement to the taxing district. This is a payment that would be made for our security costs. There are two ways that we can do it. We can put this $30,000 into the Normandy Shores, which is a significant reduction to what the supplement was in the past, but I think some concerns were raised as it related to the gate issue about whether or not the city should be paying a supplement. We have a need to provide some security for the golf course, so I propose that we pay for half of the Rover, that's what my recommendation to the committee was a week ago, so we need to finalize that. So it would be $30,000 or 50% of the Rover.
Right, and I have a couple of slides, maybe just to frame it up, if that Please. Would help. Can you get the slides up? Next slide. Okay, so this is just a reminder that we did have some moves and shakes at the end of last year related to the $500 cap cap, and so that's why the millage rate got dramatically reduced. And now when it goes back to normal this year, it'll go significantly higher. And so we did fix the ordinance issue with the cap, and so we're in good shape now. Next slide. Okay, so the main goal from our standpoint is on July 28th, this commission needs to set the maximum millage rate. So we have kind of the status quo scenario with the city subsidy, which you can see is $91,700 for the next year, and that the millage rate would be 0.7203. Next slide. And this is the scenario without the city subsidy. So you see that city subsidy line is zero, that the residence line went up, and so the millage rate also went up from 0.72 to 1.06. So that's the scenario. And the $30,000 contribution to the security rover, that's already in Park's budget. That's why you don't see it here in any way. So that's really, as far as for the direction we got at the last meeting, is potentially reduce that subsidy to zero. So we just kind of put the two scenarios here, and we really need your direction as to which way you go.
John, a question to you, though. If the $30,000, I mean, there are one of two ways that we could handle that. We can pay that directly to a security firm, or we can give that to the taxing district to offset the cost of their rover. So in that case, wouldn't we want to put the $30,000 in there to reduce the millage rate, or explain to me how that would work?
Yeah, it wouldn't reduce the millage rate because we're already paying for the $30,000 separately from Park's budget. We've been doing that. And so if we actually put it in, it's not really going to have an impact on what the residents pay. You're just going to see in the city subsidy line or something, $30,000. And I think, you know, one thing I've learned from this whole discussion is that it's probably just cleaner if we don't have any city money in that budget.
I agree. So just for my clarification, we're paying the $30,000 direct to the security firm?
I believe so. It's not budgeted here. So I'm not exactly sure how it's split. Paid for, but it is being paid for from two different sources.
So, Mr. Chairman, can we hear from John on that? So just to get a confirmation that's then, and I know you may want to make some remarks about the budget anyway.
Good morning again, John.
Thanks.
Good morning again, John Bose.
Sure, this is on. Testing 1, 2.
Okay. Yeah.
Good morning, John Bose again, Normandy Shores. Thank you guys for hearing this and careful consideration. My understanding is the $30,000 does come from Parks, as John has stated. It stemmed from a couple of years ago when there was a break-in in the clubhouse, direct break-in. There was a reaction from within Normandy Shores HOA and the golf course, and it was a meeting of the minds to say, hey, we could use the extra support, mainly for the golf course. This contribution that has been going on for 28 years of the 35%, we thank you very much for it. It's been very good for our community to have the taxing district, for you guys to partner up with us, because it does directly affect the golf course. We are in support. NOSHA is, and I sent all of you a letter last night. We are in support of eliminating the contribution and taking the full load, the 100% of the tax district, and we do appreciate the support in the past, but we're okay with it. So,
John, is that in the past, has it been that Parks has then paid the $30,000 direct to the rover firm?
I don't know the mechanics of your finance department, but I'm hearing yes.
So, because I know you guys are paying the other half, so I assume the taxing district is paying for half, and then Parks is right.
I think it comes out of our budget for one of the line items in our budget on the cost side. You know, the revenue side's not touched. The revenue side is 65% from the taxing district, from our residents paying in taxes, and 35% from the city contribution to help pay for the security. So that being taken away, it's a cost shuffle within finance. It's not on the taxing district line.
And you're saying the third option is the one that's the cleanest with that shows no contribution from the city. The contribution that's coming from the city is from the parks that's paid directly, right?
I think that's the cleanest way to present the information. But that's
so I'm going to make a motion to adopt that.
Just for the record, if I could just spend Please. One more minute on this or less. The rover itself, the $60,000, again, was an action taken, you know, a couple of years ago for a purpose because of a couple of crimes. You know, in my mind, if the city didn't want to continue that, that could be a possibility also. But I'll just put it out there that for this purpose, we do support taking the 35% away. And with that, you know, we're going to assume the full cost of the taxing district like the other taxing districts do. But we'd also request the city carefully consider the legality and upholding of the ordinance's intent. Taking that into consideration of what we're doing here, we should have some really good discussions on this intent of the ordinance and why all of these things happened regarding these gate transmitters. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could just, you know, the gate issue, I know we're going to try to resolve on Wednesday, and I think next Wednesday, and Mr. Carpenter has been in touch with both sides of the fence. Hopefully we'll get that resolved. I do think that, you know, the issue was raised by the other party that the city was paying a supplement, and so that argument will go away because there is no supplement here. And I didn't understand. I thought that we had been paying the 30 through the taxing district. So I think this really leaves a little bit more flexibility for the taxing district. If you decide that you don't need that other half of the rover for whatever, that would be your decision. And then we would decide with our parks department how best to spend that $30,000 for security of the asset that we have there.
I appreciate that. And that's kind of what we have to go back to our neighborhood and say, how valuable is this? Do we want to consider keeping this partial payment of the rover? Do we want to, you know, ask the city to cut the hours, reduce the services, or take away the services, or take the full cost of that rover? Because it is supplemental. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. So I've made the motion on to adopt the recommendation
You're for
good? The third option.
Okay. Commissioner Samuelin supports it. I support it. I'm glad we were able to resolve this finally. Thank you for your hard work and advocacy. And I know on your side of the fence it was tough work. So thanks for doing that for your community. Okay, let's just do number four. Commissioner Richardson, this is yours. This is discuss dual enrollment transcript costs to Miami Beach students.
And I think Leslie is on. So this is an item I've been working with her. So if Leslie could join us and tee this one up, that would be great.
Great. Good morning again. As many of you are aware, the city of Miami Beach has a very strong partnership with Miami-Dade County Public Schools, Florida International University, and Miami-Dade College to provide dual enrollment courses at our high school and our middle school. Over the past 5 to 6 years, the partnerships and the program has grown exponentially. We actually have a 310% increase since we started the relationship in the 2015-16 school year. This past school year, we had our greatest enrollment with over 1,000 seats filled by our Miami Beach youth residents at Beach High and Nautilus participating and taking dual enrollment courses and earning college credit for free to them while they are in high school and middle school. One of the things that Commissioner Richardson and I have been talking about is one of the costs to our youth, one of the unanticipated costs to our youth when they are in their senior year and applying to colleges that is not covered by Florida statute as it comes, as it relates to dual enrollment, is the cost for official transcripts. And many universities, as youth are applying to colleges, require students to submit official transcripts from every college they have attended while in high school. A dual enrollment course would fall under that requirement, and thus our youth, by taking dual enrollment courses while in high school and middle school, which is advantageous to them for many, many reasons,
would then be required to submit these official transcripts. Currently, the cost for an official transcript from Florida International University is $10, and the cost for an official transcript from Miami-Dade College is who's applying to colleges in their senior year would incur if they were applying solely to one school that required official transcripts, a cost out of pocket to them of $15. And that is not covered by current Florida statutes.
So members, this is actually something that was left out of state law. I'm going to work on trying to get the state law changed to include this item going forward, but it's a nominal amount and it's something that we can give to our citizens, especially those that can't. So I would make a motion that we adopt this.
Second.
Thank you.
Agreed. Thank you for bringing this up.
Thank you, Leslie.
May I seek some clarification? What are we adopting, one official transcript for any of our students that are in their senior year from Miami-Dade College and FIU? Because Commissioner Richardson, you and I had spoken about doing more than perhaps one, because students usually apply to more than one school.
Leslie, I see in your memo, $2,100 would get you one. You and I had talked about providing up to five because students may apply to five different. So I think the number that you and I had initially talked about was roughly the max would be $10,000. And so part of my motion would be to allow a student to get up to five transcripts for application to college.
I'm supportive.
Okay, great. Leslie, do you have what you need from us?
I do. Thank you very much.
Thanks. So we'll move this then back to the commission then for adoption.
Okay, great. And I think our last item, is item number five, is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
This is to discuss the Committee for Quality Education's motion asking that the city provide additional support for school pickup and drop-off areas. And Commissioner Samuel, this is your item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The QEC recently made a motion, and their request was that we provide some additional support for school pickup and drop-off around the launch of the school year. We do provide some degree of support. PD's out there doing something. So to tee this up, and it's a discussion item, I put it in finance because I knew we were in budget. If there were any budget implications, we could address it. Leslie, if you're still with us, I believe you work closely with the QEC. Maybe you could help us just bring to life the additional word, because I know PD's providing a level of support, but given that this body made a motion unanimously, could you help us understand what the specific ask is?
Absolutely. Each year, the Committee for Quality Education reaches to our police department, our mayor and a commission, just to re-ask to have the police department's motors unit at the school sites during those first two or three weeks of the opening of schools during drop-off and pickup. Our police department has been incredibly supportive of this request in years past, and also has attended each school's orientation to help new parents and to remind existing parents and guardians of traffic routes to ensure that the children stay safe. The committee was especially concerned for this coming school year because in many of our schools, at least 50% of the youth have been attending virtually and have not been on the school site. And so as the school district pivots to 100% on site, we're going to have many families and many new families who have not been to the school perhaps in quite some time. And they just wanted to re-ask for support from the police department's motors unit as they have supported the schools in the past.
Thank you for that clarification. If I'm hearing you right, it's a re-ask of something that we've provided in the past. I'm not sensing there's a financial incremental ask from this, and I don't want to speak for anyone, so John, I'm going to look to you here. We've not heard any reason that PD would not provide this level of service, high level of service that they've offered in the past, and it doesn't sound like you need any more dollars. Is that all accurate?
The QEC was not asking for additional any a type of funding. They were simply asking for this support from our police department's motors unit as in years past. So I'll defer to John, and I'll defer to the chief regarding that.
Yeah, that's request. What it sounds like. So if there is a cost, we would let you know, I guess, to an LTC. But I'm assuming if it was nominal, we would just go ahead and do it.
Okay. I am satisfied with that, and I appreciate the work of the QEC and the response from the administration.
That might be it.
That might be it. Okay. Colleagues, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I'll see you all next Wednesday.
Thank you.